Hello and welcome to episode 184 of Muse on Minis.
That can't possibly be right.
I feel like it's 183.
Yeah,
183. You know, 183 was last week.
I thought we were in the high 70s.
It's 184.
John's right. It's 184.
Some of us pay attention to what's going on.
I missed a week, so
music and amusing.
All right, this time for all the marbles. Hello and welcome to episode 184 of Muse on Minis.
Musing and amusing.
This is John, and I play Protector to Minoth.
This is Josh. Yarr.
Nigel.
I play Cotter.
This is Keith, and I'm playing Signar.
This is Chad. I still play Trolls.
Ooh, Signar.
This is Brian. I'm watching these weirdos.
I'm
watching these weirdos. I also play Trolls.
Nice.
Brian's our friend slash guest from...
No, he's your friend.
What? No, he's...
I just want to point out that John is, he has a guest in his house, and he's just like, you're not my friend. That's John Damaris, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, the nice one.
This is, yeah. So the next time you feel sad about what I'm doing, just remember, that's the kind of guy he is. And he deserves everything he gets.
On our docket for today, not a whole lot to talk about. We had a good long pre-ramble. We're talking about some movies. Well, a movie.
I know that's what you guys tune in for on this War Machine and Horse podcast, is us talking about movies. So. Yay!
We have a couple topics to cover and some news and announcements in the form of potential. We will preface these as potential spoilers.
As in, not gore shade.
For a couple models in the upcoming book. We'll start there, since they're sort of newsy. The most exciting one to my mind is Mr. Bradagus Thorl.
He's the Runcarver, right?
He's the new Circle Warlock.
So I want to just reinforce that these are super unconfirmed, like, we're not sure, spoilers.
Yeah.
But we find it interesting enough to want to talk about it, so...
And they're probably almost for sure.
Almost for sure.
They're like 99.9%. Like,
I don't
maybe,
know.
Kind of, sort of.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure I buy that these are real. But
there could not possibly be anything more accurate than these spoilers.
You haven't even seen them.
On this podcast.
The funny thing is that like in a week it's going to be Gen Con and we're going to just know.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
We might as well.
You mean the day this podcast comes out?
In the future.
No, this podcast comes out tomorrow.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
A
Lance.
Week after this.
Sorry, Lance.
Suck it up, Lance.
And Nigel swore a bunch in the pre-ramble. Have fun with that.
Oh, what? I thought the pre-ramble was...
The pre-ramble was...
No.
There's no swearing.
What? I thought that was like international waters for swearing. Just purpose of letting him loose, I wouldn't do it in the cast.
Well, surprise piracy charge.
Oh. Bradagus Thorl. These are the suspected stats. Speed 5, Mat 6, Rat 6, suggesting a ranged weapon at Rat 6. I don't think that's...
I sort of assume he's going to throw rocks.
Yep.
At Rat 6.
Oh, no. Yeah, he's got weapons listed here. Not.
We just don't know what the range or power
is.
Is it called rock cannon? I hope
it's called
rock
throw.
Cannon.
He's got rock throw and rock strike.
Yes!
He's a Pokemon.
All right.
But anyway, Mat 5 or 6, Rat 6, 14-16 are his defensive stats.
On a large base.
And 17 boxes. Fury 6, War Beast point 6.
Ooh, Fury 6.
Whew. Not 5.
Not 7.
Not 7.
Not 7. That's the more I was worried about. Like, holy crap.
Like, 7 would be bad. Yeah.
Like Battering Ram City.
Yeah.
So, before we talked about it, he had synergy, right?
Yes, we know he has synergy. Before I get into that, I'm just going to go over the rest of his base abilities. So his ranged attack is rock throw. We know nothing about it other than that it potentially has beat back, which is mildly interesting. And he has a melee weapon called rock strike. He is a pathfinder, surprise. Specialization, we knew this already. He can only take wolves in his battle group. And he has an ability that is on here listed as repair for the wolves, which doesn't work as written, but something along those lines.
So he's got some kind of skill.
A skill check to do a d6
damage removal
from the wolds.
Wait, why does repair not work on wolds? Aren't they constructs?
Actually,
can the tanker actually repair those guys?
I don't know.
I feel like he can't, but I don't
know
why.
I feel like he probably should be able to, because they're constructs and it's a repair. So
yeah, but I'm pretty sure. I feel like worlds have a specific rule saying that they can't be
healed. Josh, just grab the War Room, the rules for repair. And
Rith will get us. Give me a quick second.
I know for a fact that a million Circle players have complained about the fact that the World Wrath can't be healed by any means, except for shifting stones.
You almost had it. Gobber Tinker, this model can repair on any damaged friendly faction warjack. Because repair specifies a warjack.
Lame.
Okay.
And then Battle Engine specified that anybody who has a repair skill can repair me too.
Battle Engine specified that they can be repaired. They have a repairable rule. So without without giving having like Field Marshal repairable, then he could.
Yeah.
That'd be such a weird rule.
Yeah, it would be very strange.
I mean, it could just be not called repair.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah. Anyway.
That's probably what it
spells,
is.
Spells. Synergy we know about. Battering Ram.
Yes.
Which is a range 6 power...
13? 12.
12, I think. I'm pretty sure it's 12.
It's a 12-er.
Power 12 or 13. Yeah. And 12. Then it does a D3 push?
It's just 3.
Just 3 inches.
Just 3 inches, yeah.
It's just straight up wins games.
So that's kind of sweet on, like, Megalith and a World Warden or two. Mm-hmm.
Who's got the chips?
Yeah, it's not bad.
Who's got them?
Only Magic Ability 6, but with boosts, you can certainly get there.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost as good as Telekinesis.
He has an unspecified cost 3 nuke. I'm crossing my fingers and praying that it's not Rift, because that would be...
That'd be really good.
Be really good.
That'd be really, really good.
Rift or Eruption? Which one would you rather?
I would rather Rift than Eruption.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, there's a lot of cost 3 nukes that are just ridiculous.
They're really good.
Yeah. I mean, there's also a lot of cost 2 nukes that I'm glad he's not going to have.
Yeah.
Stranglehold?
Yeah, well, he couldn't. No way he could have Stranglehold.
Yeah, that'd be nightmarish.
Yeah, it would be nightmare. Muzzle?
That's fine. I don't care about Horde's people.
Yeah.
Well, they're not people, Josh. We established that before.
Earth Spikes. Baldur's Earth Spell is a cost 3 nuke.
That seems likely. Earth Spikes?
Ignores
AOE 3.
Cover and Elevation and crit knockdown. Everything in the AOE. Yep.
That'd be really strong. He's reported to have another offensive spell other than Battering Ram. His last spell is a battle group spell, cost 2. Models in this model's battle group gain blessed and magical weapons.
So they basically just said, so we know worlds normally can't hit, but you're going to get synergy and blessed?
Yeah. It's 2 cost to pure blood animus his whole battle group. It's pretty good.
Well,
I don't know. Worlds already have all magical weapons. It doesn't seem that good to me.
Blast is pretty good.
Yeah.
No blast.
That's, like, shut up forums. This spell is really good.
That's amazing.
Also, because this is the point that Chris and Crump have been making on the forums, is that, like, they put spells on cards all the time that have, like, not perfect synergy with, like, the caster that they're on, just because it doesn't mean that the caster... Like, this caster isn't the only caster that... potentially has this spell.
Yeah.
Right.
They may want someone else to have it one day.
Yeah.
Like a Menoth caster.
And having a blessed non-magical weapon is kind of strange. I'm not sure any of those exist, actually.
Not that I can think of.
A blessed non-magical weapon?
Yeah, they kind of go hand in hand. Part of the reason for that is because magical weapons in Mark 1, the rule for magical weapons in Mark 1 was called blessed, I think.
I mean, an Arcane Assassin is kind of ish.
Yeah.
When are they going to make a spell that allows your upkeeps to persist through... purifications and other people's count, you know, like, and then blessed weapons, like, so it's like a super buff.
I want that too.
Yeah.
The other thing that I really want,
it's called the Creel Stone.
Is I want.
Yeah.
I want.
Yeah.
No, shut up.
Like Horde's people. You had your time, Horde's people.
The other thing,
Josh, they're not people.
The other thing that I've always wanted is because of freaking Bane Knights, is I'm like, I want a model or a unit or a spell or something like that. That's like, no, this model like can never not be immune to free strikes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
This model makes free strikes no
matter what. Always, yeah.
Yeah.
Except you have to say not, because things that say not take precedence. So it's like, you know.
Well, I mean, just now the Circle can play a 2 caster.
Models cannot benefit from free strike immunity against this model.
Yeah. So before we really get into what this caster may or may not be, his feat is reported to be pick a board edge and pick a number between 1 and 5. Models in his battle group... are immediately pushed that many inches towards the selected board edge, and at the end of the turn are pushed that many inches away from the selected
and then eat one cookie because you're not playing Epic Magnus.
You mean P Magnus?
No, Epic
Magnus. No, Epic Magnus.
So, I mean, yeah, at a minimum, that feat is plus 5 inches of threat.
Plus 5 inches of threat to all the wolves.
At a minimum, isn't that also at a maximum?
It's at, no, there's a lot more applications.
At a minimum, it's plus 0 inches of threat because you can pick zero as your number.
I'm saying at a minimum, the power level is plus 5 inches of threat. There's also a million other things you can do with that.
Sure.
That feat.
Sure.
We were talking about some like neat stone tricks.
Yeah. It's rocks or socks. It's hit and run. I can put a unit of shifting stones way up the table that become really threatening because God help you if I can slide something up into a shifting stone.
Sure.
Yeah. Actually, interesting. Because you could also, you can also just like jam something up so you can't be back down. It's kind of interesting.
And like World Wardens with their animus. Like this is the thing is like the Circle Forums right now, from what I understand, are kind of mopey on this guy. And Chris and Crump and I are all like, what the hell?
Yeah.
This guy is like ridiculously legit. Like,
he's so good.
It's just an extension of freaking Circle Christmas.
Yeah.
This pisses me off.
Like, he's the part that makes, like, if this is all true, the part that makes me smile on the inside is that he pairs so well with Morvana, the way I play her. Because her one thing is like, ah, man, like, armor is kind of a bummer. Yeah. And this guy's like,
yeah.
Ah, so good. So
yeah, Wold Wardens and Ram Hands with like plus three.
Yeah. God, his tier list has the potential to just be idiotic.
His theme force could go
minus 1 point on Wolds.
If it's minus 1 point on anything, he basically that's can't happen.
I mean, because there's no chance they're not putting shifting stones in there. The stone caster.
Yeah, and like, he'll probably have Wold Shrimp too. He'll have all the, you know, rocky bits.
Yeah.
All the constructs.
Yeah.
And probably druids because he's a black clad himself.
What do Wold Stalkers start at? 13? The shield guards? Do they start at 13 or 12?
For power?
Melee
I believe it's 12.
12.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. But Jesus, though. If those guys get like minus 1 point cost.
That's not happening.
That's the one I'm worried about.
They will never do that because I actually talked to Schick about.
It's like 10 forest making guns. And then if you engage them, they're just like, power up!
Well, you can do 10 in a 50 point list and still have 10 points to spare for something huge. I mean, it's just.
I literally talked to Schick because he had proposed Amon Adaraza minus 1 point to Light Rorjak's.
What? No.
Theme list. He did. Get out. He said they put it in testing. And no, that's never going to be released.
It just blew.
And so I can assure you that that's not, they're never going to give a synergy caster minus 1 point cost on lights.
No,
especially just, in Hordes.
Yeah. Anything. I mean,
no, I mean, especially in Hordes. Yeah.
The version that they give you for minus or for free points when lights are involved is they'll give you a free light.
Mm-hmm.
If they say, if your battle group is five heavies or more, you get a free Wold Wrath. Will the forums complain still?
Probably.
Yeah. Oh, this is dope. Are you actually farm heavies?
Are you supposed to play from the feet? That's exactly it.
Perfect. That is 1 point to make already from this guy, is that he doesn't really want a Wold Wrath.
Nope.
I think he might, though, depending on his bombs, depending on his nukes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Battering ram by itself, if he can three off battering rams.
To animus it up, so that like all of his other spell slingers, but that's the problem is like you're paying 20 points to up your other spell slingers.
Also,
you're already playing 20 points.
I don't at all. I think a Wold Wrath is counter to his strategy.
I think the Wold Wrath is a fun way to. It's something. I think there's a list variety that'll be good.
Yeah, I think it'll be fine.
I think the obvious one is just light those little 4 point guy spam.
Yeah, then I like.
Megalith is in. Megalith is in. Like,
yeah,
100% in.
Yeah, totally.
Probably one Ram Hands because on the other point that I've seen people make is like 14, 16, he's just gonna die. But you
Flesh
just
of Clay pretty good.
Flesh of Clay pretty good, and a battle group full of like shield guards all pretty good. Because the one caught their animus, like you can either run their animus, which is no knockdown, no stationary, or you can run the Flesh of Clay.
The thing that Chris was talking about that I really like is running a bunch of Wold Weirds, which I'm like, holy F, yeah, that's ridiculous.
Well,
yeah.
I am not certain that this.
Do Wold Weirds have a melee attack?
No, but they have a really legit gun. And. That's so the gun. Their gun is gonna
be like, blessed. That'd be cool.
Blessed.
I don't know that it will bless guns.
We don't know that it's gonna bless guns. But even if it's not blessed guns, like you're not gonna. There's gonna be no upkeeps if you have Wold Weirds around, you know, and your battle group is blessed in melee or whatever. Like that's just Yeah, plus the world weird can shoot you if you cast a spell. They've got their like little arcane suppression animus, and then boosted attacks and boosted damage rolls. And with the feet, you can move them up 5 and aim and be like, and then come back.
Yeah, I really think one of the strongest ways to play him is going to be the pseudo walled gun line.
Yeah.
Like those guys, the little the shield guards have guns, and then the spellcasters have whatever spells he can throw out. So you're just like, all right, this turn, like, I'm just going to alpha the crap out of you. Feet, like, everybody's like, some people aim, like, now there's forests, like, jammed up in your front line. Rough rift template, rough terrains, because it's definitely rift. I hope it's not rift.
Everything's going to be slammed and battering rammed, like, yeah. D6 plus 3 inches.
Oh, pass, wow. Pass, pass.
And then his whole battle group just, like, backs up behind druid clouds, and you're like, bleh.
Druid clouds have forests. Forests that didn't exist before. Because, like, that's the other thing. World Wardens can, like, run up, like, hit, combo slam, and then make a forest if they still have 2 fury.
And then back up 5 inches.
And then, you know, well, only 2.5 inches, but that's still enough to, like, block line of sight from a lot of stuff.
They don't have Pathfinder?
It's a push. Pathfinder is during advances.
Yeah, so they're probably still in the template, but because of the way forests work, they're still going to block line of sight to a lot of things, especially if you have 2 wolves like making forests side by side.
Yep.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, God, that's going to be so frustrating. I don't know. He seems really good.
And also 100% accurate.
Are you immune to free strikes when you make that push?
What?
Yes, you're immune to free strikes. Pushes don't push. Yeah. They did not provoke free strikes.
They're not movement, so.
So you could, like, save your feet, push yourself sideways out of, like, melee range of everything that's engaging you, and then just, like, go. I mean, there's a ton of stuff you can do. I choose 3 inches to the left forward edge. Wait,
you could push yourself.
Sidestep?
If they jam you, you could push yourself backwards.
If you want to charge.
Yeah. You know? I'm not sure that's good because unless he gives a free charge.
Right.
But
it's just
black clads. They have black clads, and, yeah.
I really want someone to soundboard Sean saying, I choose 3 inches. I believe that's what he said on his creation day.
I mean, it's like in those character creations where you have to pick, you're like, he's like, I want to be like lucky, like super lucky. And it's like, and the trade off for that is 3 inches.
I choose 3 inches.
It's not the size, it's how you use it.
It's the motion of the ocean, baby.
Boosh.
So yeah, I think
I definitely get more momentum than you do.
It's probably worth it.
Super lucky.
Like it's
I'm pretty
it's
lucky.
It's dicey. I tell you, if you go the other way around, I feel like you'll get lucky more often than not.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So
I get pretty lucky.
Yeah. Well, all right.
So what is there anything on this list of spells and abilities that we're going to call BS on?
Battering ram? No.
No, I mean, none of them seem
the feet, if anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, the feet seems slightly...
Even the feet doesn't seem
maybe
that.
Too... It's on the high end of complicated.
It's complicated.
For feats that they
it's
produce.
It's on the high end of power, too.
It's also extraordinarily powerful.
I mean, Doomshaper's feet is plus 4 inches.
Three
only.
Is it only 3? I thought it was 4.
It used to be double. Now it's 3.
And that feat is ridiculous.
Yep.
He's very strong.
Shay's feat is ridiculous.
Yep.
Well, it's both parts of the feat are good, in my opinion. Yeah. Like, the front end movement, where you're getting your guys closer, and then also the back end movement after the feat is done. Like, it's kind of like Gristle's feat, where just the back end movement on her feat is super powerful. Now, that's better, obviously, because you get to choose where you go. Like, you can have some guys go forward, some guys go backwards, like side to side or whatever. And this is limited to the table edge that you chose. But I feel like 90% of the time is probably just going to be, I choose 5 inches, and I choose your table edge.
Like, to a certain extent, you also have to remember that he's limited to wolves, which means he's limited to a slower battle group in general. So his movement shenanigans won't be quite as...
They're not that slow.
I was pretty sure.
Speed 5 and speed 4 on the ram hands.
I thought they were speed 4. On the
ram hands is speed 4.
Only the ram hands is speed 4?
Everything else is speed 5. Okay. I think the weirds are speed 6 maybe.
But even ram hands is 12 and a half inches a threat.
Yeah.
They don't charge for free, right?
Currently.
And they have, like, the low fury count. So, I mean, there's, like...
Which is why synergy, I think, is fine on them.
It is. I'm just saying they're, like, it's not... Giving Wold's additional movement is not, like, directly translatable to giving Molg additional movement. Like, that's not... It's not the same thing.
True.
Yeah,
they're
also...
They're low fury, they're...
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
I agree with that.
Yeah. It's good. I'm just saying,
plus 5 inches is powerful.
I understand that, and I don't disagree with that. I'm just saying, like, if our perspective is maybe this is too powerful, maybe this is like too high on the
it would be far too good for Warpal Stalkers.
Yeah,
for sure.
I don't disagree with that.
that would be really dumb.
But for Ram Hands, it's fine. It's good. Really
Megalith,
good.
Megalith's going to be pretty.
Megalith's
nasty.
Animus is going to get you.
Like, yeah,
there's no way to hide from Megalith Animus in this case. It's, what, 5, 10, 13, like 18 inches dangerous?
Yeah.
Coming at you from 18 inches, his Animus?
Yeah.
It's a good long ways.
And then they can... God, there's so many things they can do. Like, they can have stones strategically teleporting, like, for models that they don't want to back up, you know? So just, like, block them from backing up.
Yep.
After the turn is over.
You could port something and then feed it forward for 17 inches of threat.
Oh, yeah. That works.
Yeah, you could do that, too.
I don't know why we didn't think of that right away.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was thinking of, like, shifting things forward into stones, but it's just as good to stone shift them forward and then have Bradygus pop
probably
forward.
Better, actually.
Or stone shift it forward, then send it to the left. You're just, like, zap. Over, like around a corner or whatever. I don't know.
It's going to be difficult in some of these situations to keep the battle group in his control at a six.
At only being a six.
That's one of the big complaints. Speed 5.
But he is affected by his feet as well, as currently written.
Oh, is he? Okay.
That
helps, obviously.
Big complaints people had of him is like, well, 14-16 on a large base is kind of hard
but
to protect.
14-17.
14-16.
Okay.
But my counter argument to that is his battle group is going to be made up of like nothing that his battle group is going to be made up literally of like entirely models that make forests and are shield guards or have flesh and
right.
blood.
Yeah.
Like
pretty good.
With the exception of Megalith, every wold has a defensive animus.
Yep.
I mean Megalith is also defensive too. It creates the rough terrain. So it's like
Wold Wrath is offensive.
I'm not taking the Wold Wrath.
Yeah.
You've been splooshed.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I think he's very strong, as written. The only thing that I'm dubious of two things. The battle group spell is like maybe, but that's something that'd be strange to make up.
Yeah, it's weird that we put synergy and blessed.
It's not that strange to make up. I feel like blessed magical weapons is like something that everyone wants to be able to give there.
Sure.
Like so, if I was like. The Crone of the Black, too. I hope like she has a spell that gives blessed weapons.
If you take the argument that synergy is really good and probably shouldn't be in hordes, and people have made that argument, and they're artificially limiting it by only allowing it to go out to wolds, but then you're just like, let's stack another buff on top of that because blessed is actually a buff.
It is.
So it just makes me wonder, like, they could have just given it to a different...
That spell is actually the one thing that has Chris, like, pulling his hair out for like, are these spoilers real or not? I don't know. Because he's like, everything else seems like it could be legit. And
it's
then like,
that
is this
the
one
feet.
Spell? Like
it's that in the feet.
That spell is just like the completely like troll spell that some guy made just to like,
yeah,
you know, all wolves already have magical weapons. This will piss everyone off, you know?
Because it's that, and we knew he was probably going to have some sort of movement fixer because wolves are miserably slow.
Mm-hmm.
Like, speed 5 no reach is bad. But we didn't know what it was. I think it being the feet is the right place for it because synergy is so powerful. I didn't expect it to be an every turn movement fixer.
He's going to alpha so hard, though.
He's going to alpha
pretty hard. It's
going to
hurt.
And I think with him,
he's going to be beefy.
Yeah.
Like, wolves are really hard to kill.
And I think with him, I feel like it might be worth it to invest in Una and a Quicken Chicken so that you can get the black clad, like, out and back, so they can go out and Hunter's Mark stuff or go out and spray to help infantry clear, and then pop back to a shifting stone.
Mm-hmm. It's dependent also on the whatever his theme force is, obviously.
True.
But, yeah.
If his theme force is just, like, bombs away, like, this is Forge Master Centurion, theme force and hordes. Like,
yeah.
Boop, boop, boop.
Yeah.
LT's theme force.
So, yeah, but...
I can't wait for the book to come out and this guy to be completely made up and us to have just wasted your time.
Yeah. There's not even Bradygus Thorol in the book.
You know what?
Boosh! Even the picture on PP's page was us like a troll. Suck it.
I don't appreciate
Records people.
I don't appreciate your ruse, sir.
No, it's Circle. It's 100% true.
I guess Meg Maples is moving to Australia, and she's got like four last classes in America before she heads over. And it's September 27th in Kansas City, October 4th in Kansas City, October 18th in Maryland, and November 1st in Atlanta.
I've heard that if you want to become a very good painter, that those classes are worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
Nice.
I think it was Aaron that was telling me that he'd taken one of those classes. So
the other semi-confirmed spoilers that we'll talk about a little bit today is the Legion character Nephilim Heavy Warbeast, Zuriel.
Nephilim Heavy?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's basically Moloch Karn.
He gets on roids. Sweet.
He's Moloch. Yeah, Moloch Nephilim.
Is this going to be a Rias pal?
Yeah.
Rias and, I've heard, and Saren. Yeah, Rias, and he has a separate affinity for both Rias and Saren.
Sweet.
Base stats, speed 6, strength 11, mat 7, rat 5, and he's 13-18, fury 4, threshold 10, 28 boxes. So he's a little bit, he has fewer boxes than a Scythian, but he's plus 2 defense.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
On the
14.
Isn't that exactly Moloch Karn stats? Isn't Moloch Karn 13-18?
Yeah. 14-19
with
tenacity. 28
boxes.
With 28 boxes.
That's pretty rough.
Point cost 12, so you pay for it. You pay for it.
Legion beasts are expensive.
The point cost is actually, because I'd heard rumors about Zuriel a while ago, and the point cost was different the last time I heard about it. It was lower, and I was like, bleh. But it being significantly more expensive than a Scythian makes sense. Eyeless Sight, Flight. His affinity with Rias is purportedly Long Leash, which is good for her.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
His affinity with Saren is Channeler, which is excellent for
her.
Yeah. So she's not limited to her two.
Yeah. Breath Stealer for everyone.
Yeah.
He is PS 17 on 2 reach attacks with Chain Attack Smite. And the Animus is Rage.
Ooh. That's really funny about.
I don't know if I believe that.
So that's the discussion point. Because other than that, he's basically a Scythian, a very expensive Scythian, and I'm pretty sure he's got a gun that's not mentioned here.
Oh my God, Rias is Rage.
Because he's Rat 5.
So Rage would be exceptionally good in Legion.
Yeah,
and people keep complaining about it on the Angel, and it actually drives me a little bit crazy every time. Because
it's not very good on the Angel. It's amazing on the Scythian.
It's +3 damage. Who cares? It's just +3.
It's still
+3.
They get
their one attack. Mm. And then you're like, okay, whatever. Now they're +17 on their extra attacks. That's okay, I guess. Whatever. It's just +3 on the, like, because people are like, +17.
+20 Scythian is not way okay. Better.
So it's not, I don't agree with that take on it, but I still think it's very good on the
it's
Angel.
It's good on
because,
every heavy.
Because it's not just that it's +3 on the AP. The problem is that the Angel goes in and he's like, take out half the jack, right, with his first attack.
Yeah, and then he can kill it.
And then maybe he can kill it with, with Rage. He's guaranteed to do it, right?
With Rage,
no,
though,
I'm saying
it's
he can maybe kill it with Rage.
It's just way better on the Scythian, because the Angel makes...
I don't disagree that...
The Angel makes 4 attacks.
Yes.
The Scythian makes...
6.
I'm just saying...
7 with Bloodbath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just look at opportunities to use it outside of,
not
the battle engine's probably
great on. You might
hit
other things, too.
Well, and the argument, yeah, because
can you rage the battle engine?
Sure. Yeah, you can rage. You can
model.
Rage champion
friendly
yeah,
model.
Like it's that. Friendly.
That's what
friendly
makes it so legit.
Model,
yeah. So that thing makes that thing 3 POW 18 reach attacks that pull you in.
Other models good with rage? Shredders.
Yeah.
Yep.
Shredders are gross.
Yep.
Yeah.
Power 13 rabid shredders.
Yeah.
No, they can't be rabid. They can't be rabid at the same time. Oh no, they can't.
It's not an animus.
But
other things I'm looking forward to raging. I'm gonna rage Rias. Because she goes in, I often send her in and kill a beast and then siphon that fury and then sprint away. That's going to be fun.
You know who doesn't care at all how much armor you stack anymore? P-Vale.
Right. Hmm. If you take a 12.0.
Power 22 Scythian.
Scar feet every single turn.
little bit of the old power 22 Typhon, eating your face.
Going to have a bad time.
Mm-hmm.
Although if you take Typhon, you've got 24 points in beasts. Is Typhon 12?
He's 12. He's a Typhon 11?
12. No, he's 12.
He might be 13.
24 points
no,
in character beasts at that point.
Doesn't
pretty good 24 points.
Doesn't the guy that makes the spawn with his feet, doesn't he have a +2 damage buff as well?
Oh, yeah, he's got Ignite.
Ignite, yeah. So.
Pethek Rosh also has a +2 strength.
Yep.
To model unit.
Ooh, yeah. Callus.
Yeah.
He's got Dark Guidance, right?
And yeah, Pethek Rosh. Pethek Rosh also gets a free Animus.
Yeah.
So Pethek Rosh can almost rage an entire unit of War Spears.
Yeah.
And then they're. Talk about, like. Really painful assault at that point.
Pow 18?
Because they get Prey.
Pow 20s?
Pow 20.
Prey, +2 strength from Draconic Blessing, +3 strength from Rage.
I forgot about Prey. Yeah. And I think they start at 13, right?
Yeah. It's 17 without... It's 17 right now.
Okay.
And you want to talk about how, like, miserably difficult to kill that 14-19 Zeriel is?
Then he 14,
just comes back, then he just comes back to life.
You can't do a character beat.
Yeah, he can.
Thagrosh?
Typhon comes back all the time.
I thought it was only non-character.
I have had to kill Typhon twice so many times. So now he's Zuriel /
so
Imperatus.
Many enemies that like are mediocre in trolls that go into other factions and people are like, ah!
Yeah.
You really think Rage is mediocre in trolls?
How many times do you see a Mauler?
I think the Mauler is mediocre.
I believe that the...
Zuriel is not.
So I believe the existence of... It's not so much that Rage is mediocre, the existence of Flaming Fists and
Acidic Touch
make Rage more mediocre because you have to buy the Mauler to get it.
Holy crap, I may be back in on Legion.
If only the Mauler had 2 attacks and was 13-18.
Yeah. So the part about this,
the part about this
that I have the hardest time with is 13-18 because 14-19 is...
Pretty good.
That's just...
Doesn't Riot just have decap personally?
Like crit
decap.
Okay, thank God.
She's a weapon master.
Yeah,
you're like +6 damage on every attack. Nah.
She becomes the butcher, basically.
Yeah.
Well, -1 mat, -1 pow, but...
And minus focus. / fury.
Yeah.
She has reach now, though. I love playing Ryas. Oh, my gosh. And then those new Striders that are coming out.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to be so good for the way I play her.
Oh, yeah. So that's another announcement we need to go over, I guess, is that they announced a plastic kit for Striders.
Yeah. Plastic kit for Striders, which includes
Strider Blight Blades?
Is that what they're called? Blight Blades.
Yeah. I'm excited about them because...
They're pretty cool. Let me read their fluff blurb.
I'm excited about them.
I think they have poison.
But as little as the spell dudes are used, or the little like ninja guys that they've already got.
Hexhunters? I see them all the time.
Oh, I just never see them.
I see them every time I run into, what's her name, Bethane?
Bethane, yeah.
And for some reason, every time it's happened, I've been playing P. Denny. So I kind of giggle at them because they always seem to have crippling grasp on them and don't do anything. They're like, magic. Nope, can't use that.
Gotta take those throgs.
Throgy? In the arena of reconnaissance and assassination, few can compare with the Blighted-ness Striders. Their incredible speed and elusiveness are gifts of their Draconic Master that cannot be duplicated through mere instruction or training. Strider Rangers silently stalk their prey with longbow and sword. Strider Blight Blades eschew the longbow in favor of a pair of wicked blades infused with blighted energies to infect any that suffer their touch.
Oh, crit poison.
Yeah,
or poison weapons. Okay.
Or corrosion.
Yeah, so we're saying that like one of the dumb speculations was that every time they killed somebody it would create a
incubi?
Incubi.
No way. That's not happening.
Like the Mutalisk is already almost too good. Like I haven't seen much of him lately, but I haven't seen much Legion lately either.
Yeah, like I said, I might be getting back in on Legion.
They say recon, so obviously AD, but they could have Ambush, which would be sweet.
That'd be cool.
That'd be
Striders
really
are already the regular Striders are already AD, so I'd be like AD and Stealth are pretty much guaranteed.
Mm-hmm.
Speed seven.
Probably Mat 7. I think Striders are Mat 7.
They are not.
No, well, they might be Mat 7 though. I think they're Rat 7, aren't they?
Well, Strider.
They're Rat 6.
Striders.
So they might be. They're Mat 6 then, because they're one Mat higher than you would expect.
They are Mat 5, Rat 6. The Striders.
Okay.
They do have double gun.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
John cheated real bad against me with Striders once.
I remember that.
Real bad.
Are they speed 6 or 7, Nigel?
They're speed 7.
They're speed 7, but you were treating them, I believe, as Mat 6, Rat 7 in the game. And they were destroying my NIS.
I remember the Rat 7 part.
It was the Rat 7.
Typical Damaris.
Classic.
But we don't need to... That was a long time in the past.
That was a long time ago when he played Legion.
Mistakes get made on occasion. It wasn't intentional.
So, yeah, I mean,
they were
that's,
at 7-2 for some reason. Yeah.
It's another
because John's played the game. Yeah, probably. Because
you're just about. Like, man, these are really good. How many points are there? Man, that's good.
Wow. Freaking Legion.
Yeah. They reform. Ah, man, these guys are great.
Yeah.
So it's another, what I'm guessing will be quite solid infantry choice that most Legion players will neglect to take advantage of.
Oh my god, if they keep the Strider stats, they will just be Kassites. They will have ambush. It'll just be just as aggravating.
Just like straight better Kassites?
No, they'll be straight worse. They're mad 5. Kassites are mad 5. Yeah. They're rat 4.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so then they're coming out with these like two swords.
I'm pretty sure the two sword guys are not going to be mad 5.
I don't know. They're Striders, bro.
Makes a good point.
Yep.
They don't rely on their skill, they rely on their blighted energies.
But then they'll have like some rule that just makes you hate Legion like versus Kator, that like they'll be gang and flank like Striders.
Oh yeah.
And you're gonna be like, damn it.
Yeah. You know? So the conversation that we didn't have that I wanted to is obviously the questionable point for Zuriel is rage. Is rage legitimate in Legion?
It's really good.
It's very, very strong. Like,
isn't it like fixed pretty much their one weakness that they have right now?
That's what we said when the Naga came out, too. It was like, why did they put this in Legion? But I kind of feel like Rage completes the circle on why did they put this in Legion without being too much of a doomsayer about it.
I don't think it breaks Legion. It just makes them really, like...
It's nice that you have to pay 12 points to then have it. So like,
and a character slot. So
most of the
crap
you want to buff with Rage is probably in that 12 points, you know, that you just spent.
True.
You're picking up... Yeah, I mean, you're basically upgrading... Scythians are 10?
11?
I think they're 10.
No, they're... Nine.
They're 9. No, they're nine.
Yeah, it's 9 for them. So you're
it's 11 for
three
the,
points.
Yeah,
you're because he certainly takes a Scythian spot. Because he's otherwise, I mean, he's an upgrade. He's one higher power, or not one higher, one higher mat, and his defensive stats are better. Although he loses 2 or 4 health over the. I think are they 30?
No, they're the same health. They're 28 boxes.
They're 30.
The Carnivan chassis at least has 30.
It's 30. It's 30 on the nose.
Okay.
30
because
on the nose.
Angels are 25 and Carnivans have 5 more.
So BS.
Yeah.
Oh my god, Proteus!
Actual Mahler's
in the He's actually useful.
Proteus with rage.
Yeah.
Is he though?
I don't know.
He's got a lot of initials.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, how many is it? How many initials? Is it
3?
Is it more than 3? Okay, because that's how many. That's functionally how many a Scythian and a Carnivan have.
Yeah, Rage on a Carnivian actually is pretty good.
Does have Sweet Matt, though?
No, he's Matt 6.
What a
he's
piece
Rat
of
6.
Oh, my God. Matt, Rat 6.
he's Matt 6, Rat 6.
Don't get excited about Proteus, Nigel.
He drags you in, then he hits with the other initials, and then boom.
Old squish face.
Oh, jeez.
I can't think of or look at that model without thinking, like, without the sound in my head going like,
yeah, for sure. For sure.
So, I mean, yeah, we talked about the major applications of where we're going to see Rage. It's going to be all over the Scythian, all over Zuriel himself, obviously, and all over Shredders. Like, the Rage Shredders are, that's scary. That's a scary thing.
Do Nephilim Soldiers become playable?
I don't know. Somebody call up Nephilim Soldier and tell me what they look like.
Their base, POW 14.
I don't think they're terrible.
A lot of soldiers are okay anyways. Aren't they, like, not just the worst if you want
to
build them?
They're kind of a tweener, which it's hard to play tweener models. Like, they don't hit hard enough.
It's definitely one I saw a crap ton of those things in Mark 1, and I still saw a lot of play of them in early 2, but they've gone away.
Yeah.
Matt 5?
No, 6. And they've got Massacre, which is an interesting animus.
Yeah.
Free charge.
Angels with plus 5 strength is
going about Rage.
So. Is going to be frustrating just for, like, the...
One shot at something.
Well, just for like deal half of your damage and then still be able to kill you. Whereas like right now I'm like, oh, well, that first one's going to hurt. But then afterwards, at least it'll be fine.
Right.
Terminus no longer is a Legion drop with Rage on the table.
Potentially not.
Two Angels with Rage.
Yeah, that's bad news.
Pretty much say get out of town.
Spend these beers. It's it definitely changes the landscape. Again, when you're talking about playing against Legion, because right now armor spam is pretty viable against them, so long as it's not armor spam that's all caught up in magical buffs so that they can't just drop Lilith and shoot it all off the table.
It's such a weird thing. It's like an embarrassment of riches problem. Like, it almost seems like it'll break the game, and then as soon as you wrap your head around it, you realize they don't have the points to make like close this loop of death, you know?
Yep.
Because it's like it's not like they're just slapping them onto a list that already has 2 Scythians and 2 Angelias, you know?
Yeah, it's not like if it was a character Shredder with Rage... That was like 3 points?
Yeah.
That would be bonkers.
Yeah. I feel like the world is over, basically.
Yeah.
But it's no, a 12 right. point
I kind of feel like it almost is a character shredder because the Scythian is going to be there anyway.
Well, yeah, but...
It's a 3-point upgrade to a Scythian, but now you can't lose that Scythian.
You can't right. just keep it back like you could a 3-point shredder.
Which is why I think Pythagrosh is one of the more exciting places to have him.
Mm. Yeah, I agree.
I was thinking just epic Thagrosh. Like, doesn't this guy just like buff up the shredder spam like to another level?
It like take makes shredder spam pretty
like 10, take 10 shredders and then have
functionally like power
Azuriel just 15 shredders. That can rabbit run like on his feet. I mean, he's on his feet, you know, he can be like rage.
Yeah.
Pop feet. And then Azuriel rages another one and then you're like 19 inch run or whatever. Or what is it?
18.
Right. And then 3-inch walk. Or no, and then another 8-inch walk. They get 16, a full advance, 16, right?
It's 16, not, it's, not yeah, striker. It's 24 and a half inches.
It's not striker's feet. It's just they get to move again,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it's 24 and a half inches.
And then with, you know, well, you probably don't cast the third rage, I guess, so you can cast Signs Importance yeah. or Manifest Destiny.
Right.
Is rage friendly faction?
It is.
Yes.
Thank you. All right.
What were you worried about?
I don't know. Like the...
Gatorman Posse?
Yeah, the tentacle dude, like if you take him with Wrong Eye Snapjaw, he's got, what, like 4 initials?
Oh, yeah.
That guy gets gross.
Trolls would have put it on so many things.
Yeah.
If it was friendly faction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or not friendly faction.
If it was just friendly, I mean. Yeah.
I think, yeah, I'm feeling Pythagrosh for this guy. Feeling him.
I think both thags are really good.
And Saren.
Ryze.
She likes, she
I'm
likes
actually feeling Kallus. I like this Kallus thing.
Yeah. She'll be.
Everyone's happy.
Yeah, everybody's happy.
Except for me.
Why Kallus?
Because he's got Dark Guidance, and you actually take the Battle Engine to make it useful. Like, 3 POW 18s that drag you in.
Actually,
Dark Guidance
and Dark
with
Guidance.
Ignite and Rage, it's basically Peace Scar.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, actually, also good with Saren.
Yeah, Saren, because the 1 feat turn to keep him viable longer.
Anything that breaks up their turd-nastic battle group that I'm sick of seeing anyways, like 2 Rev'gors and 2 Angelii, get out of here. Like, so he'll break that up.
Well, we didn't even talk about how good he is with Rev'gors. Right?
It's good with Epic Veil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. POW 18.
That actually is really legit.
Like, doesn't that... Yeah.
Yeah, because if he's just a 3-point upgrade of a Scythian, and he just takes that one, because they always take 2 Angelii, 2 Ravagors, and a Scythian, so he just upgrades the Scythian, and then now your Ravagors aren't helpless when they get jammed.
Yeah. Well, it's like, he gets to go in there and try and clear them off himself, and then you put Rage on, like, 2 of them, and then you're like...
Yeah.
Yeah, that actually is frustrating me more than anything else we've talked about tonight.
So, yeah, I think... because... If we're talking about buffing up Ravagors, you also want to be able to make them hit because they're mat 5, which is kind of...
Why did their beasts all of a sudden become the other trolls? They have also repulsion and... Like, what?
They became the faster trolls.
Yeah.
I don't know.
We got Isla's Sight on that night troll.
Yeah, we're taking them back.
Yeah.
Taking them back.
That's a
little cross-pollination.
Yeah.
It's just like Jay's game. The dice are coming back.
Damn.
I think I might be back.
Swinging in your favor.
Are they?
Feeling called to Legion.
Mm-hmm.
Rage and Legion makes me want to play him.
You're such a power gamer, John.
The more we talk about it, the less I'm sure about it being okay or not.
Yeah. Like, I'm thinking a lot of applications.
So strong of Pythagrosh.
I'm imagining a P-Veil gun line now that's just going to be like, Ravagor, Azuriel.
Yeah. It's like close,
shoot
close
forever.
Close with these Ravagors. I dare you.
Yeah.
You forgot Typhon.
I don't know. That
like
that doesn't fit.
60 points I just...
I'm just saying, Typhon's really good with P-Veil.
Yeah.
Like,
how many points are Ravagors? 10?
Yeah.
So it'd be 44 points for that, and then like 15 points of... God, that would work. That's so frustrating, actually.
Now, let's see, like 2 Strider Deathstalkers.
Ravagor, Azuriel, Typhon.
And then the pot with like the girl taking a bath in it.
Oh, I love that model, by the way.
Is Scorn and Shredders. Circle getting the beast groups?
Yes.
Okay.
No.
No, it's
Legion and Scorn.
That could also be bad.
I mean, then it spreads out the rage target, so it's...
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't know how they work.
Yeah.
You might be able to just continuously buy attacks with one of them, because they have fury stats equal to the models in the unit, supposedly. So we don't know how they work. Because you could just be like, buff that guy up to... Like, you could be like, put all the buffs on that one.
On this one, who happens to be the leader.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, we don't know. We have to see their rules. I don't want to dive into that rabbit hole just now.
Yeah.
I saw another spoiler. Did you guys read Helga's fluff blurb?
Uh-uh.
I didn't either. But
I read it, but it was like basically spear and magic helmet.
Super vague. She has flashing blade or sidestep or something.
I can read her fluff blurb for you guys if you want.
Do it with a dramatic voice. The dramatic reading of Helga the Conqueror.
Josh doesn't care because it's for Horde's people.
That's correct.
And not even like they're not even.
That was nice of you to call them people, though.
They're not even first class. Like, these aren't really people because they're minions.
Hey, playing. You guys. Yeah. Just for the record,
huh?
Hordes people are not people, but Scorn people are people.
No,
no, they are. No, I actually, I genuinely feel bad for.
You
Scorn
got that
players.
Backwards, actually. Yeah.
No, I feel
yeah,
bad.
Yeah,
for them.
I think so.
Yeah,
I do. I genuinely do.
Having secured her vast territories through a combination of strength and cunning, Helga the Conqueror stands as one of the most formidable Pharaoh warlords. With her great spear and shield cannon, she is a whirlwind of steel on the battlefield, and she can draw on her arcane reserves to bestow mystical strength on the warriors fighting beside her. Their every blow becomes a battering ram, capable of sending enemies flying back to shatter through walls, trees, or anything else in their way. Wait, sounds like she might have
Cyclone too.
Borka's old feet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where every attack
really
slams.
Yep.
Yep.
Ballroom blitz.
Boom, 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 boom. That's his Mark 1 feet.
Boom, yeah, I kind of missed that. Boom, boom.
That'd be a really good feat. I'm not sure how good it would be in pigs.
That's the problem.
Yeah.
How good is anything in pigs?
Nothing.
Not very.
She's one of the most formidable warlocks they have, a.k.a. she's the fourth one.
I mean, yeah, it's like getting excited about Pharaoh releases before they give them like something to make an army with is kind of...
When they can't ever give him something to make an army with.
Why?
Because Carver breaks it.
Carver exists.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, if she has Dash and Defender's Ward, too. Like,
yeah. Oh, no, she's the fifth one. She's the fifth one.
Oh.
I mean, Sturm and Drain, really.
I mean, they exist.
So she's the sixth one?
Well, Sturm and Drain are one model.
All right.
It's, yeah, it's Carver, Arcadius.
Carver, Arcadius, Sturm and Drain, Midas, and... Helga.
I mean, yeah, both Midas and mm-hmm. Carver are, like, bonkers.
They have to always just kind of put their throat on the pigs' necks, though, because if, like, pigs ever became relevant, it's the only thing keeping Scorn players from going, like, full Gollum on the bit.
I wanted to just get, like, a better bronze back, like, in pigs. Just, like...
You guys, can we please seriously stop making fun of Scorn players?
Just
because
Bronzehog.
I'm the one that gets blown up for it.
Uh-huh.
Like
that's
Miami,
kind of why we're extra doing it. Like,
yeah, Miami has been taking the Scorn players to task.
Uh-huh.
And then somehow they keep taking shots at me, like I've done that.
Well, it's because they know that you have taught us that that's like it's like when a kid goes to school and he's like you know 6 years old or whatever. And he acts in a racist fashion, you know that his dad has been racist at home. Like, I know that, right? So, like,
and you're Papa Mom.
Yeah, and you're
so
Papa Mom.
When your children are factionist against the Scorn players,
it's obvious.
Everyone
where it came
knows
from.
Where we got it from.
Yeah.
This is learned behavior.
Yeah.
Chad will tell you all about it. It's psychology
classic,
101.
Classic nature versus nurture. This is all nurture. Don't check me into this.
He's just going to go to church next day. Jesus, I don't know how you did it, man.
Yeah, I just...
Naturally, we would all support Scorn, but nurture-wise, John has...
He's taught us.
Yeah, yeah. He has twisted our innocent minds.
That Scorn players...
Our innocent minds.
Okay.
And to believe that all Scorn players are undeserving whiners.
Yeah.
I have never said that.
Who are generally bad at the game. Especially
yeah.
Trevor.
And they might be...
Yeah.
Keep
craven fish eaters that live in caves.
God, you guys.
Wanting
what really sucks is I'm the one that's going to take the brunt of all this.
We just explained why.
Yeah.
Yeah, John, don't be redundant.
Look at what thou teaching hast wrought.
My teaching?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, additional topics for today. That sort of wraps up the spoilers that we've heard about. Next week, we won't quite have it yet, but the week, 2 weeks from now, we'll have all the Gen Con spoilers.
Oh, yeah.
I think Exigence will probably be there. So
bad.
I mean, if these are coming out now.
Presumably, I guess we're all just assuming that Exigence is going to be there. But they put the book up, 3 weeks ago?
Yeah.
And I think it's actually released next month, right?
Yeah.
So
they've been
very surprised.
In the past few cons, they've been making a point of anything that's been shown will be there. Like anything that they have that they've posted pictures of,
yeah,
will make it to the con. That's been the case for the past couple of cons.
So I guess we're all just like crossing our fingers. So it'd be like the biggest episode of Blue Balls ever, basically.
If 2 weeks from now we're like, eh, we have nothing.
It's like watching Castle and Bones and that stupid nerd show that Carter's likes all in one.
Oh man.
Yep.
Alright, so I have a question for you guys.
Uh-huh.
I was just thinking about War Machine and
that's good. Thank God. About time.
Oh, God.
It's good timing. That was all you.
Yeah. Oh, Nigel saw it, too, because he started laughing before I even started.
It was like a unique like, icebreaker. Guys, this, you'll never believe this. I was just thinking about War Machine. Yeah. And
mind blown. Yeah.
Go on, John.
I was just thinking about a topic, and I thought it'd be interesting to discuss. Uh-huh. A lot of people listen to podcasts because they want to become better players, I think.
Uh-huh.
And so I was just thought we could have a discussion about what you think your strongest trait as a War Machine player is, what makes you competitive or good, and what you admire about maybe another player.
Sure.
I don't know. I just thought it'd be an interesting topic.
Yeah. So it's interesting, Josh. You mentioned once that you think positioning. You think that I'm one of the strongest positioning players.
I do.
That you've ever seen.
I do.
And I really that compliment really sank down deep. Thanks,
yeah.
Josh.
Yeah.
Really made me feel
that's
really
feel good. It's feel good.
Made me feel really good.
The homo cracking got off to a hot start.
Yeah. I told you it was going to be. Yeah.
I mean, that is a danger.
I'm not even going to bother.
So what? Anyway,
with the humbleness.
Oh yeah.
Well, because Nigel and I were having a conversation last night about positioning. And I made the point that, and I've been saying this because there's been a bunch of new Trollblood players, like new high visibility Trollblood players, like Jay has switched to Trollbloods recently, and Alex Shaver just sold all of his like Legion and bought a bunch of Trolls, and sure. He's been playing them too, and so they've both been talking to me a lot about like, you know, things well,
he
has, that they're...
He hasn't been playing them so much as he has been wearing kilts and throwing cabers himself, but...
No, he's been playing them. He's been telling me about games and everything. So, but he's also doing that, yeah. And they'll come to me talking about games that they've played and kind of coming up with, you know, revelations that they've recently had, and we just kind of have been talking about it. And, yeah, I was making the point to both of them. I'm like, you know, because they were both talking about how they didn't notice positioning as much until they started playing Trollbloods. And I was like, yeah, I think that Trollbloods are probably, this is the point that I was making to Nigel, that kind of started a little argument. Is like, I think Trollbloods are one of the most like important positioning armies in the game.
So I'm going to agree and disagree with you at the same time.
Okay.
So I think that the thing that you're really good at, because positioning is such a broad topic, you're really good at positioning for the next turn, mm-hmm. so that you don't trip over yourself and you can do the things that you need to do,
mm-hmm.
without having an order of operations problem or a getting-in-your-own-way kind of problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that you have to be good at with Trolls. That's a different form of positioning than maybe some of the other factions have to deal with, right? Because
yeah.
the medium base is...
Well, I think
else.
That the argument that Nigel and I had was spawning off of we were both saying different things. Like, we were both making different points, rather. Because that's the kind of positioning I'm talking about, where, like, I want to maximally utilize all of my models, or at least I try to. And I think that Trollbloods as an army actually forces you to do that because, like, this is the point that you were making was that, and stop me if I'm putting words mm-hmm. in your mouth, please. Because the point that you made, if I remember correctly, was that any player of a sufficiently high enough caliber will try to get maximum use out of all of their models. And that means, like, support models that are buffing a unit that can also make an attack, people will try to get maximum, like, value by buffing and also making, you know, being them. Setting them up in such a way that they can get an attack, whether it's a good attack or not, because you want to try and get every bit, every, you know, piece you can. You want to try and get every, like, every little bit, basically. And I agree with that point that people do that, or that people of a sufficiently high enough caliber do that. The point that I'm trying to make, or that I, like, the way that I feel after having played Trollbloods for so long, is that, like, for instance, you can do work, like the Pain Givers, and you've talked about this
yeah.
before, John. like, Painkillers are an incredibly good unit, not just for what they do to War Beasts, but also for what they're, like, offensively capable of, because they have reach and anatomical precision, and they can put or remove theory off of enemy War Beasts, which are all, like, incredibly good abilities, like, offensive abilities to have. And if you can set up to use them for your, on your War Beasts, and then once your War Beasts are dead, max, you know, utilize them in a way that they are also, you know, being offensive and being good.
Yeah, I guess...
But my point is, sorry.
No, you're fine.
That, like, Painkillers are only 2 points, whereas, like, the Creel Stone is, like, 5 points. And so in order to... And, like, that's the way that, like, troll support is, like, across the board. Like, it's just generally, like, more expensive, like, by a point or two, you know?
It also does more work.
That's my point.
Yeah.
But you have to be able to set it up for doing that work.
Yeah, but, I mean...
The people that played...
Yeah, but here's what I'm saying. The type of... You're just using a little bit more narrow definition of positioning, I think. You're very, very good at planning for the next turn and getting good use out of your support pieces. And that's a really strong positive. I don't think that necessarily means that trolls are harder to play in a positional game than some of the other factions. They just have different problems or different positional advantages they have to take advantage of. So, for example, in Menoth, Choir are the easiest thing in the world to kill. The easiest thing in the world to kill, and they have to last for the whole game, otherwise your game plan falls apart. You can only protect Choir by positioning them well.
Yeah, that's true.
So,
Risen are much easier to kill than Choir.
Okay. I suppose, but I'm just saying, like, it is a different kind of problem, you know, than you're talking about, a different kind of positioning.
Except I think that applies doubly to trolls. Because you have to do the same thing with the Creel Stone.
You have to keep it alive. They are easy to kill.
And they're a lot harder to kill than Choir.
With Felt-Collars, you know. They're harder to kill.
They have tough. They have much better stats.
I've chewed through a unit of Creel Stone with Gun Mages over 2 turns,
Three more armor. That's mm-hmm. And tough.
Yeah, that's a
lot. Better. I would say that...
They actually have, with the Stone Aura...
Three more armor.
Yeah.
They go to 16, Choir of 12?
They go to 15.
Oh, I thought they went to... I thought they were...
They're not hard to kill.
I know what Chad's saying, because having played trolls, like, keeping a whole army... Because they're medium bases. It's the medium bases that really cinches it. Keeping a whole army of medium bases, and they're infantry heavy. Infantry heavy, medium base armies. Keeping all that, like, moving and not jamming yourself up and keeping everything... Keeping the whole army, like, well lubricated... It's a level of complexity that is problematic. The other type of positioning game, I would argue, that exists out there that is totally different is the kind of positioning game that Jake Van Meter plays with his all-heavy army. Like, if this guy is, like, half an inch too far forward, I lose him, and he's a huge point investment. That's another, like, where the placement of each individual model is so critically crucial. Whereas in the Troll Army, the placement of any individual model isn't necessarily crucial. It's their in relation.
I don't know if it's all that much harder, but you can't play Trolls competitively without that skill, period. Like, so maybe in that regard, it's like inherently, but you have to be X good. Because when I play Trolls...
That's, I think, the point that I was trying to make.
But like, all of them can make a Rube Goldberg machine that's complicated to play and difficult to sort of set up and not get in your own way. But Trolls, just, you have to. You couldn't functionally play that army without having that sort of inherent advantage. But I think that's also sort of helped you. I think that's why you're good at placement. You know, when you have no speed buffs for Troll Champions and Warders, or, like, to, you know, you've been playing them for X amount, you have to be 9 inches away, which forces them to, like, run in near charge range so that you can, you know, like, provoking a charge range when you're just completely outclassed is, like, a skill, you know, because you have to be, mm-hmm. and those Van Meter sort of just out of their threat. And then they have to volunteer. Me and actually John were talking about, we've both had meltdowns on, like, I used to yell at Beanish when I'd have things that were faster than him. I'd have, like, Iron Fang Pikeman against Bane Thralls, and I'd just be like, idiot, I'm going to charge you. You can't just back up out of my charge range, because I'm just going to walk 2 inches and stay out of your charge range. So just walk in my charge range. Let me charge. We get this game going. You know, I'm not going to be an idiot and give away my models. Yeah, and, like, you know, you have to explain it. Like, every once in a while, an opponent will force you. But there are smart players. That's the thing. It's like, some people have that skill, and there's no reason at a tournament.
You know why he's doing it, because a lot of times that works.
Yeah, exactly.
Where it's like, yeah, they're faster than me, but if I just back up a little bit, like, they'll get impatient.
Yeah.
And they'll, but, like, yeah, when you're playing against, like, someone that knows, like, you know, and you're just like, come on.
Yeah, exactly. Like, we've got to get this game done today. Please start playing. You know, yeah.
I yelled at Carnage in a very similar manner.
Well, he does that all the time. He'll be like, I'm in your, it's like, I'm not quite in my own charge range, but I'm in yours. I'm going to back up 2 inches. And then your opponent's like, and then runs everything at you. And you're like,
yeah. I just would never do that. It's just frustrating. Which is also why you always, just in general, tangentially, always take a gun for the love of Christ. At least one gun on your list so they can't do that crap. So, anyways. But yeah, Chad, that is definitely your positioning is always pretty immaculate, like when you move your stuff.
Yeah, that's the point that I was trying to make, I guess, is just that, like, I feel like for trolls, like, you have to do that. Whereas for other factions, like, if you do it, it puts you up to another level. But
I think to play competitively, positioning is the most important skill in the game.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I mean, that's the game.
I mean, the game is about positioning, but
yeah. It's a semantics argument, I guess, too. It's like, I don't really care to have it. Whatever.
Yeah.
I
made
the point.
But the one thing with trolls that you get is interesting is you do a counter. Like, you can take that load off you a little bit mentally. Like, and I don't know if everybody who's played trolls has done this, but I start organizing my guys. So if you actually look top down, you'll see that they're patterned.
Yeah.
And in, like, almost like bowling pins. And so you can always have these angular lanes. So them front on can't get your creel stone, but your creel stone can angularly run through and out.
Yep.
So you always have that formation. But that once you have that, it's like inherent. You just sort of start doing that.
It's really hard to do that and not have them be able to just, like, walk off to the side slightly and be able to see down the angle too and just get the line that they need. But because that's what I always try to do is I leave, like, little lines from my, like, support models to be able to, like, it'll be like the Felcaller is going to buff this guy with whatever, and then he's also going to walk up through this line that I made that, you know, is not obviously seen, and then he's going to spray a bunch of guys, or he's going to charge.
And if you do it well, a lot of times they'll have guys who are immune to freeze strikes or something, and they don't think they can squeeze through your models, but they can because you've left no space to squeeze your own models through.
Yeah.
And it just looks weird. You know, you have one model and then two models, and it looks like, you know, if you look straight, but you can clearly squeeze. If you take a Lico, you'll just squeeze your, you know, so you'll get pretty good at that type of formation.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's just, I guess I'm just done humble bragging. I feel like I'm just talking about it, but
I mean, it's something that's really important to focus on, though, is positioning for the next turn. And you kind of have to have an idea of what you want to accomplish, and then what order you're going to do it in. You know.
Yeah.
And so that's just thinking ahead. I just think that's one of your strengths. Like, you think ahead and you know.
Yeah. Whatever. So anyway,
John's strength is his indomitable will to play in all those bad matchups. And keep his head up. Like, I don't know how he does it.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Right, so then Josh.
Yeah, no more needs to be said about that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I kind of have a story to explain what I think. So, John, I don't know if I've ever told you this story before. Once me and me mates, we were sailing, and we came across a pair of humpback whales, a male and a female. And the male, as he's wont to do, was trying to impress the female. And so the very first thing he did was swim down deep in the ocean as far as he could go. He swam back up, breached the waves, humpback glistening in the sun as he crashed through the waves. And he looked back, but the female, she wasn't impressed. She was able to do it just as well as he. In fact, even better. Swam deeper, crested higher, beautiful humpback glistening in the sun. Showed him what was what. He pressed on, though, as men are wont to do. And the next thing he did was just take a deep, deep gulp of seawater, briny seawater, and he blew it right out of his blowhole. Just this amazing tall geyser like you've never seen before. Spray, catching the sunlight, rainbows in it, just gorgeous. And he looked back at the female. But once again, she wasn't impressed. She took an even bigger gulp of seawater, blew an even bigger geyser, just incredible, over our mast, just amazing. The poor male humpback, you know, he was a little bit dismayed, but he decided to give it one last try. And he looked at her and he said, "Let me show you what I can do." And he got up to full speed and he charged our poor ship and he crashed right through it, sending sailors splashing left and right into the ocean, and then he gobbled up a whole deck of me mates. And he looked back at her.
It's not a semen joke, is it?
He looked back at her, and she wasn't disappointed. She was disgusted. And as we struggled for our lives, I heard her say to him, I'll hump. I'll blow. But I'll never swallow semen. Yarr. And really, I think that goes to show what my biggest strength in that game is.
No argument.
You're telling it. Yeah. Like, I kind of wanted to chuckle at like half the things you were saying, like, you know, humpback, big gulps of briny water, gulps of briny, and then you know, geysers. You know, it's like, ah, oh, this is just gold.
He's gonna make it on a pirate comedy tour.
Yeah.
One skill that I appreciate about Keith is he plays his army very well. He gets the most out of his individual pieces.
Yep.
In a game. And I'm not sure exactly why that is, but your army just does a lot more work than I see other players get out of their army.
He's exceptional at wave formation, in my opinion. Like, a lot of other players will attempt it, but Keith is the strongest I've ever seen at making sure that he picks the correct matchups for his guys to run in on, and then, like, gets a little bit ahead from the first wave and then a little more ahead from the second wave, and then he has the third wave. It doesn't hurt that he has access to mechanothralls and stitch thralls and necrosurgeons.
Like, players like Keith, and it is to his advantage, is the reason why Warwitch Sirens and the Wither Shadow Combine, to me, are really irritating, because it's like he will never miss any of those corner case rules when it's their turn to come up. That's the whole point. Like, they'll dark fire when it's time to dark fire. They'll puppet strings. They'll remove your upkeeps. They'll turn your jacks into jacks. You know, they'll always have, you know, max efficacy when it's the time to have that. Same thing with the sirens. You know, like, if anybody's going to pull a clutch seduction off, like when it had to be pulled.
I forgot seduction last time I played, and I could have. There was a game where I could have just seduced a siren out of a zone, or seduced Anastasia out of a zone.
Yep.
But instead, I had a hell diver that I could put two focus on, so I just had an eater instead. But yeah. I could have seduced her out, and I didn't because I forgot about it.
But those are the ones. It's like, why is that on the card? If you're going to, like, stream that, it's probably because you're playing Keith, and he's like, you know, he set it up so that he's going to get that use out of it.
Yeah.
I was basically going to say the same thing about how sweet I am, but
yeah, I know it's kind of a weird topic, but it's interesting because different players have different strengths. Like, for example, Chuck never gets tilted and always plays his plan.
That's what I was going to say.
And he dynamically changes his plan continually on the fly based on how his dice are going in the turn.
Yeah, I've had that. Yeah, Chuck is one of the players that I admire the most, just in his ability to, you're like, ugh, I ground him down. Like, Chuck has no outs. Like, it's just mop up from here. And you can never switch into mop up mode against Chuck because he's always going to do something crazy that somehow keeps him in the game. Like, actively in the game most of the time. You're just like, I don't understand how he's still, like, he has forged a new path to victory.
He's, like, trampled over some guys, then he made a couple attacks at the end of his trample, and then his caster did a little bit of work, and he's like, god dang it. He's, like, way more in this game than he should be.
I feel like there are only three paths to victory. It's, like, scenario, assassination, or attrition. Chuck has magically found, like, four more paths that I can't explain.
Yeah, no, it's actually really fun. If you ever get a chance to sit down and just watch him play sometime and watch how he systematically goes through his turn and just never gets tilted by dice and just dynamically changes his plan on the fly. Will make the best. Actually, I think what his strength is, he makes the best of every situation on the table that he can. Like, I see him make mistakes. Don't get me wrong. Everybody does. But he just, he's very even-keeled and methodical. Yeah, it's fun to watch him.
He doesn't get tilted.
Nope. Yeah.
Which is a big strength. The best thing you can do.
Yeah, he doesn't get tilted, but he will tell you all about every bad dice roll he had in the game if you beat him.
Yeah.
Because he remembers every one of them.
We all do that. Yeah.
Not me. I said that with a straight face, so it's true.
I guess if I were to actually evaluate what I think that I'm strongest at, I think that I'm actually a really good student of the game. Like, I think that more than a lot of you, I pay closer attention to games outside my own, other people's games, and I pick up something from every game that I watch.
Yeah, you probably are. You're just in a different phase, because all of us used to do that a lot.
I'm sure.
But that's true. You're pretty good at tuning up an Earthbreaker.
Yeah.
Thanks. It's hard. It's hard work. It's hard work.
I saw you forgot to do it once, and then you learned your lesson.
I did. That's right.
Yeah.
Actually,
like, never again.
Legitimately. Never
again. It was it, like I'd plant my flag in the ground, like this day.
I would say.
This is a better way to do it, actually, talking about other people's strengths rather than your own, so we don't have to worry about bragging. John's greatest strength in the game is list building and theory crafting. It is a skill that I wish I had because a lot of my lists are incredibly uninspired.
Yep.
And I feel that every time I look at them, I'm like, yeah, this list is uninspired. Then John's like, Keith, I reinvented the game again. And I'm like, ah.
How do you do it? Like every other week.
Yep.
And it's usually in a way that like explicitly screws you.
Yeah. Well, it's because he hates us all.
You guys inspire me.
Yeah. Although Nigel may have reinvented that. We can't talk about it, though.
Yeah.
But I was going to say,
John are good for each other.
I was going to say, Nigel being here is, because Nigel also has that as a big strength, obviously, is, like, Nigel is even more, like, John's like, these things are good, and I haven't tried them together in this combination. And Nigel's like, no. This stuff is bad. Try it with this stuff. It's good. And sometimes that's really good for the creative process. Like, Nigel is, like, he's unapologetic and unafraid to try anything.
Yeah, that's where he's. I feel like John is the better theory crafter because Nigel doesn't know when it's too janky.
Because John has never put Kasai Woodsman in his hand. Nigel has multiple wishes.
I refuse to leave a stone unturned. I will touch them all.
Nigel will ultimately discover more interesting things, but his list will never be as good because there will always be new and worse jank in it.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
His Ocean's 18 list is pretty tuned up.
Yeah, he's played it enough times, but I don't know that he'll ever get another list that he's played to that point.
Yeah, I do have my meat and potatoes Vlad list. I think that's just going to... Like, that's a great list to sort of mortar in with.
Yeah. I do really enjoy list building. I think that's my favorite part of the game.
I think that's also a huge asset for John, too. I do the same thing in my list building. I think that's really John's super strength, whereas me is just kind of a fun side thing. Like,
yeah.
I think, actually, just to go back to Josh for a second, the thing that I most admire about your game, Josh, is your willingness to learn and your willingness to take hard lessons. So, no, when you first started, like, you ran your head into the wall over and over and you were never deterred. Like, you were determined. You have the right frame of mind for a new player, which is, I'm here to learn, and my ego be damned. Like, I'm just going to play, and I want to play against the best players I can find. So, please run me over.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think Josh's games are actually interesting to watch. I think the student of the game thing is kind of an accurate description because you can see him in certain phases of the game. Like when he's playing Colin, he gets – it's actually I think Trevor has sort of the same complaint in a lot of his games too is like he's crushing his way up on attrition and then he'll do something that he just loses. Like he doesn't understand necessarily how he lost. And I see like Josh get to those points where those are all those learning games. It's like you're 70% there essentially. And I've actually – you know, like all of us have been there, you know, where we're – we're crushing, we're consistently ahead on attrition, and then we're still losing these, like, weird games at Squirt.
Yeah.
And then it's sort of like, you know exactly where that's at. And then you also see other games, like, you'll be playing Colin, you'll get to that 70%, and then you just you crush it. You know, like, if he doesn't have an out.
Yeah.
But you'll start seeing more, well, you'll finish games out more consistently as you go.
I would like fewer games, like, 5 control points and all the army points lost.
Yeah.
Like fewer of those games, if possible.
That has never happened to me. So I don't think you're going to have that come up too many times.
I watched that game, and then it wasn't until you described it that way that I was like, oh my God.
If that ever happens to you again, I'm going to say that's a you problem.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, as soon as the game was done, I was like, well, if I did this different, or this different, I would have won the game. And, like, I recognize that. The problem is, and I think that's actually something that, like, I'm kind of struggling with, is there are these, like, small teetering points in games that actually end up deciding the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't, like, I'm having trouble seeing them in the moment. And, like, I need to get better at that.
Really, I found that you can't. You don't ever see them in the moment.
Yeah.
And most, it happens.
Most of the time... When you do it correctly, it's from muscle memory. It's from just knowing.
Yeah.
Rather than being like, oh, thank God I didn't accidentally leave this guy an inch too far back. Like, moved him forward because now is the time to move him forward. Like, you don't think about it. You just do it. And it's a question of being warm in the game, playing enough that you haven't, that all those things come naturally to you.
Yeah.
Well, it's like in the game Jay played on Twitch last night. where it's like 85% of the time or whatever, his Earthborn walks up to throw a guy at Gorman, and it happens, and Gorman dies. And it's just like, you don't even, and then he's just like, yeah, Gorman died, whatever, and he keeps going on with his turn. And then in that game, he rolls Snake Eyes, because he forgot to boost, and it's just like, oh, that's the game, I guess. You know?
Yeah.
And like, you don't realize it until the Snake Eyes comes up.
Yeah.
And you're just like, oh.
That was important.
That was the game, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just an aside, I do feel that way. Like, I thought, like, as soon as he missed, I just felt like the game's lost. But that happens a lot when you're in a tournament.
Yeah.
You know, just something idiotically dumb happens, and you just can't, you know, you load up all for, like, one big hit, and then you miss it or something crazy. Or it's amazing how often, if you just calm down, it's not a big deal.
You
it's
can like, fight yeah. back out of it.
Yeah, just channel your inner Chuck.
Yeah, if you just, you don't even have to, like, it's actually sort of the Brian, like, that's a sort of his like, mental endurance. Like, that stuff just happens, where you miss a critical ashes to ashes or something, and you just
yep.
don't. You know, you just funneled so much of your focus on that turn and making that happen, and then to miss it, and you really needed whatever was, you know. But if you just, like, calmly, like, back everything up, you know, and just, like, ah, whatever, let's just make it hard for them, you know, or whatever, you'd be surprised at how often that toilet bowls, especially in Death Clock now.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a different deal that it's just, it's weird if you just never give up on a game.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
There are definitely critical things that you can come back from.
I don't think,
then,
yeah, I don't think, like, Chuck's like a bold move guy. Like, he's a super bold move guy. I just think there's a thing that's like, if all you do is just calm down and kind of internalize and just stop giving away your crap. You don't have to, like, you know,
you don't have jam to them with stay the committed to a plan.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't have to, like, being flexible. So I see this a lot. People sort of formulate a plan. And I do this while somebody else is playing their turn. Like, you're formulating your plan and you're adjusting it as you see how their turn unfolds and how things. And so you might be making tweaks to your plan, but you have a good idea mm-hmm. when it rolls over to your turn, like what you're going to do. And then in the middle of your turn, sometimes it's best to have to completely adjust what you're doing because things haven't gone well on dice, or you're not quite in range, or, you know, you made a mistake or whatever. And that's a really important skill, to be able to be flexible, to not fall in love with a course of action.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and being able to have backups for failure, that's something that I always try to do. It's like, if this needs to happen, and if I'm planning my turn around, like, X model dying or one particular thing happening, I want to have at least three different ways to make that happen.
Yeah,
because For a while, I think some of the people who accused me of being a Luxac were mistaking that, because I'd be like, I need this to happen. And I'd be like, go plan A. And plan A works a lot of the time, because I lead with my strongest foot. But if plan A fails, I'm like, go to plan B. So it's like, things always go your way. And it's just like, well, I try not to plan my turn around something that's a coin flip.
Yeah, and then it also gives you the flexibility as you're playing your turn, so you want to get goal A done. As soon as goal A is accomplished, you can redivert resources. So there's a balancing act of committing resources that also, so like, if something can only get goal A done, you want to activate them and try them first.
Yeah.
Right. So it's actually an interesting, because you're trying to keep your options as open as you can as you go, in case you spike some dice rolls or whatever. You know, say you're trying to wipe out a unit, and you have Nis going, and they're taking single shots, and you just happen to hit all and kill them all.
Yeah.
Well, if you activated them first, and you could have charged with some guys into the front lines and killed the front four, and then the Nis could have shot guys behind them had they gone second, it gives you more flexibility. That's something you're very good at, is having redundant plans and taking what you get out of it. So I don't think I explained that very well. I know what I meant, but I just can't articulate it.
I don't think you explained it particularly poorly. Be surprised if people didn't understand what you were saying.
Yeah.
The thing that always annoyed me about Keith's luck, and I always, the times that I would always complain about him being a luck sat, is when you'd be like, all right, I've got this plan A, and I've got these 10 models to try and accomplish plan A. And so it'd be like, all right, model one, try. Did it. Awesome. I guess models 2 through 10 are just going to do all this other awesome. I'm just like, God.
Those are the turns that feel really great, but yeah. It's like when it's like the sixth model that does it, it's like, God, the things always go your way. And I'm just like, Yeah, so, you got me. I guess I'm super lucky.
Yeah.
There's a quality that I really appreciate about the way Nigel plays and Josh Holt plays also. He's got a little bit of that in him.
The rogue factor?
It's not necessarily the rogue factor. It's more like during the game, Nigel plays a bit of a shell game with you in that he's not – so like when you play against Beanish, for example, Beanish is a methodical – try to gain minor edges as often as I can. Will Pagani plays that way too, mm-hmm. and they're really good at that. Nigel is playing a shell game with you. Like, he's giving you something juicy, trying to get you to overcommit. Like, he's doing more of a on the mental side of the game.
I think of it as like in Gestaltian terms, trying to provoke. I want it to appear as though things are in more peril than they really are. And then they commit a bunch of crap to it. And I'm always playing those stupid mind games. I find it doesn't work as well on the higher. So the deeper into a tournament you go, the less, especially in Masters. Like in Masters, that almost never flies anymore. But it works great getting into Masters. It's amazing. Because, you know, you'll throw, like typical experience of this will be, you know, you just the way you position stuff. So you'll position Manhunters just slightly closer, but in a way like up the flank, and it makes them uncomfortable. They don't want to go after Beast 09. Beast 09 is who they should go after, but they'll sort of freak out, and they're like, I just got to deal with these Manhunters. And then they'll have like an Angelius like go over there and like attack a stupid Manhunter who's in, you know, or whatever. They'll just, you provoke these weird things with just, it's like slight like model psychology. You know, you're just placing things in an aggressive, weird way that sort of makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah, I just, watching you and Holt play, you guys operate the game differently than I normally do, and I appreciate it because it causes me to expand my thinking. Like, why is he doing that? And then when I figure it out, I'm pretty proud of myself. But often I'm like, I have to ask you.
Hmm.
I'm like, what were you thinking when you did this? And he'll tell me, and I'm like, oh, that's actually pretty smart. So
yeah, that's also why I hate convincers. It's like why I just immediately melt. Like, get out of here! I'm trying to play head games.
Yeah,
and head games is a part of the game that I have no investment in. Like, I don't do it hardly at all.
I don't think you need to be good at it to be good in the game.
No.
In fact, I think it's actually a little bit of a...
I don't think you do, but it's really interesting.
It's fun.
Because I'll be watching a game from somebody who plays head games, and you do it, and sometimes John does it, and Holt would do it back when he played, and I wish he still did.
You know who else is really good at it? I'm sorry to interrupt. Jake Van Meter.
Yeah, he can be really... He can be as well.
He's the Jedi Master.
Yeah.
And so... I'll be watching one of these games and I'll be like, wow, that seems like a really stupid move. And then I'm just like, I know this player is not dumb, but that seems really dumb. And then their opponent will just do something that's equally perplexing and lose the game. And I'll be like, how did that happen? I'm like, well, I just put this guy here so that they would respond in such a way as to get their caster killed. I'm like, I don't know how, I can't make somebody do that.
Mm-hmm. It's, again, you have to be able to push it, your chips in the middle of the table, and you should lose them, but if they blink, then you don't, and you just get, like, these weird wins, which it can be super rewarding.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Sammons did that to me
mm-hmm.
in the Commander's Crucible at Daikon. He ran Scar screaming directly at Harvey, and he basically gave me, like, the double Cataclysm for the win, which I probably should have taken. But I don't take like 60% assassinations, and he knows that about me. And so he just put it right up there and got Harvey right out of the game because I had to run away. I was like, well, I can't stand here in front of Scar.
Yeah.
It was Scar one. I probably should have taken my 60% assassination and been happy with it, but I never do that. And it completely screwed me up because I was faced with this choice of like take a 60% or take my caster out of the game. And I chose to take my caster out of the game. Then mm-hmm. I eventually lost.
Well, it's not like Harvey does anything anyway, so.
Awe and Martyrdom, pretty good.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Not like a Scar one.
Yeah.
Martyrdom is pretty
dark,
good.
Dark Guidance.
Yeah, no, Martyrdom's pretty good when you're playing, like,
also,
I was playing models. A bunch of Paladins.
Oh, yeah,
so.
Also that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. But it was just interesting because it legitimately caught me off guard because I just... The games I normally play, that just doesn't normally happen. Yeah. Somebody just runs their caster directly at you.
There's actually a game I can think of where you actually talked me out of playing one of my stupid head games, and it sort of bothered me at the time. It was like, I was playing against Josh, and you had the Earthbreaker, and there was a flag over on the side, and I had Great Bears. And I'd position my Great Bears in such a way to encourage you to want to take it with the Earthbreaker. Like, I'll give the flag to Earthbreaker. And then that way I can just get my Great Bears. Because you actually out-threat me quite greatly with, you know, like, my Great Bears have no business ever
getting to this.
My only hope is that you'll want that scenario point, and I can kill you the Great Bears. And you ended up, you know, and then John Kibitz, he was like, just take your point, or whatever. And I was like, ugh. So I went and moved the Great Bears to the objective, and then you just, like, blew them off the board. And neither of us got points. I was just like, God dang it. Like, I just lost I just lost my... So I did have a scenario point to show for it, but I, you know.
Yeah.
But that was one where, prior to me responding to Kibitz, I was positioning. I was trying to play, like, a little bit of a mind game with that Earthbreaker to coax it out. Because I also had the Behemoth at the middle of the board. Uh-huh. So if I could just get you on that freaking flag...
This is why I don't commit your games anymore.
And yeah. I think there's value, a lot of value, actually, in being able to play mind games for small stakes to get those little edges. Because that's something that you can fold into your game and make a lot of profit on. Trying to play head games for the whole game, like the all-in plays, the all-in mind tricks.
That's what I was going to say.
Is something I don't really want to incorporate into my game. Like,
seems ruinous.
Having those skills is neat. But I don't think, like, that's, like you say, it's great for getting into Masters sometimes, but it's a gambly, it's pretty bad in Masters.
I was going to say, I don't think I do mind games, but I think that if I do, it's definitely for, like, the caster kill, where I'm like, oh, my caster, like, just you could kill it, I guess, you know.
Yeah,
depends on, yeah, I was going to say, like, you definitely, with Madrak, you 100%. I'm just like, oh, Madrak's look how far forward Madrak
he does
is.
It with Grisel, too.
Yeah.
That's it is and it isn't, because it's a trick that it's like the oldest trick in the book.
Yeah.
It's like, look behind you.
Yeah.
And people that are like, no, you're playing trolls. I'm not going to.
Right.
There's nothing behind
it. It still is a bit of a mind game if you're not familiar with playing trolls, because you're just like, well, that's not where that's supposed to be.
The funny thing is that
I can charge this caster with my heavy. Clearly, it will die.
The funny thing is that sometimes, even when you're not playing the mind game, like, cause I remember specifically a game I was playing against
Epic Magnus. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Where I was like, you could have just killed me. And he's like, what are you talking about? You're crazy. Like, you were surrounded by a bunch of guys. And I'm just like, yeah, you got, like, obliterator rockets and Galleon and, like, all these guys that could charge in. Like, it was, like, almost a sure thing, actually. And you were like, let's do the math. Yeah, it's like a 90%.
I was like, God damn it. I looked and I was like, oh, Madrak and, like, five guys like that.
That's the mind game that trolls can play. They can be like, you can't kill me.
And you're yeah, you're right. It's like, whew, thank God.
I have done that in a few games where somebody's meant to move their caster, and I'd be like, if you put your caster there, I'm going to kill it. That's not really a mind game, because I really feel that way. Mm-hmm. But sometimes I do, and then I just kill them with Krios or whatever.
Yeah.
And then I'll feel like, I wonder if they thought I was playing a mind game, and I actually convinced them to put their caster there by accident. I'm not sure. Anyway, it's just an interesting discussion.
Like, they're just like, call.
Yeah.
And you're like,
yeah.
GG, I guess.
So I have actually a really bad habit, you guys might have noticed, and it comes from playing board games with my friends. I found that the only way that I can win a board game ever is to convince everybody that I'm losing. Mm-hmm. So I have a natural defense mechanism to act like I'm losing in games.
Really?
Yeah.
That's something you do?
Yeah, it is.
Does anybody else notice that? No. I don't.
Weird.
Yeah.
But it's not. It's actually not intentional.
Yeah.
It is actually second nature for me now at this point.
Yeah.
It's like the plumage on a peacock.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like it shoots it up and.
But I.
Yeah. Yeah. You're a peacock, John.
I've been told by a few people
that
during the games I've convinced them that they were winning when they weren't. After they evaluated the game afterwards, they're like, actually, I was losing that game the entire game, but you managed to convince me that I was winning, so then I got a little sloppy or I did this or that wrong. So, anyway, I'm sorry. I'm going to work on that and try not to do that as much. But
no.
Not really. Like, I actually legitimately feel bad.
That's the version of psychology I try to avoid. Like, I generally just try to be jovial, joke about stuff, and keep it light.
Yeah.
And then try to, like, cut all the other... Like, yeah. I actually feel like there is gamesmanship. There are people out there who are... They have a little bit of a subset of skills of gamesmanship where they're sort of wasting your time on your turns and all that stuff.
I definitely try not to do that.
No, you don't. Exactly. But I just avoid all that. Like, I've tried to clean up my game almost saying, more in that regard.
He's saying that you are in a subset of scumbags that do that.
I mean, I do really feel like a lot of those matchups are bad, and then I evaluated them.
And you're like, oh, man, that was super easy.
Yeah.
I think I used to do stuff like that. I think everybody does that at some point, you know, like when dice are bad or whatever, or they just want to complain about stuff, or, you know, you'll table talk things in a way that sort of is convenient to you, or, you know, makes you look like you're in a bad spot or whatever. But
actually, I will say I'm going to say for the record, just so you guys know, if I wanted to be a douchebag, I could be the biggest button pusher ever while I was playing a game. Like, I'm really good at getting into people and causing them to, like, react in negative ways. Like, when I played poker, I used to tilt entire tables just by talking while I was playing. Like, I'm pretty sure I could do that in War Machine.
Yeah, we talked before about how we can't play poker together. We just would stop being friends.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Almost instantaneously.
So, yeah.
Josh is bored.
Yeah. Well, there's only so many times I can call John a scumbag before.
<You know. laughs> So, like, I said my piece.
Yeah.
I said my piece.
It's...
What's our clock?
We're closing in on 2 hours. And the only other thing I was going to say that I think really leads to good play is... And something that everybody here does is analyze their games and figure out where they went wrong. And all good players do that.
You have to.
Like, you can watch Pierre after a game. Like, he will sit there and stare at the table and start moving models around. You know, basically, like, I should have put this guy here, and then he couldn't have charged me there. Like, and he will be replaying the game, like, right in front of you if you watch him. And I'm like, oh, he's really setting that in. Like, he's really setting that lesson in. So, like, one thing that Pierre does is he never has to learn a lesson twice. Like, he learns it, and he just has it.
100%. I don't know. You're telling me he'd never been killed by a double stones teleport prior to that game?
I'm guessing he probably hadn't.
Yeah, maybe not.
I think he was, did you watch it?
No.
I think he was positioned as well as he could have been to try and stop it.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Pretty close.
I mean, I just wanted to take a cheap shot of Pierre.
Yeah. Yeah. Accomplished.
Yeah. Hashtag Oz Grant.
Oh, man.
And is that an inside joke?
Yeah, it is. It totally is. So. Yeah.
We can't.
Yeah. And I doubt he'd seen a volume of Epic Krueger.
Fair
at
enough.
That point, too. Yeah.
I don't know. Actually, I don't think I've had this discussion with, like, at least three of you. I think I might have had it with John. But for the last 18 months I was in Minneapolis, you know, since the Beanish and Brian days, I haven't had – when I used to be learning about War Machine, I would have a game – that was, like, frustrating, and I'd lose. Sometimes I didn't even win, but I would think about it to, like, 4 a.m. Like, it would cause my brain to fire, and I just literally couldn't sleep. I would just be in the dojo. I'd be thinking about it, and eventually I'd come to some sort of, like, madness-induced revelation at, like, 2 in the morning, which would cause me to, like, pace around my room at, like, a high speed till for another 2 more hours to go to bed. And, like, I've had that several times since I've been down here, which is a good sign. It's definitely improved my play. Yeah, especially, like, qualifying for Masters now. It's, like, just breezy, like, rolling in. But I've, you know... it's neat to see, like, those games where that provokes that sort of, like, how do I solve that? You know, like,
That's a really good sign. I used to do that a lot when I would drive up to Des Moines for game night. It's like it was like a 45-minute drive from my house in Ames to Des Moines when I lived in Ames. And, yeah, like, then on the way back, like, if I had a bad game or even, like, a close game or whatever, like, the entire way back I'd just be – like, I would just turn the radio off.
Yeah,
and I would literally just be like in my head the entire way back, like, okay, if I had done this and if I had done this and what if I, like, how do I answer this? Like, I just don't know. And you're just, like, playing the entire game. So it's good to know that I'm not the only one with that level of obsession.
Yeah, I have games where I think about it so hard. I'm not mad, but you could literally fry an egg on my forehead. Like, I guarantee, like, my face feels flushed. I'm thinking about it so hard or whatever. And I'm just, like, so stoked about it. Like, I'm going to just completely, you know, you make, like, a list change and you know you've locked it in.
Yeah.
And then you just can't wait. That's just one of those. I don't know. Do you guys have those? Or
Yeah. That happened to me most notably when I was playing the Death Jack a lot, and John was in his guns phase. And I was like,
no,
ah, stupid.
It was my enliven phase.
Whatever. I was like, stupid Death Jack just keeps dying. Like, he's just, stupid Death Jack. Stupid protectorate.
Yeah, I made the mistake of saying, Death Jack's my free 12 points. Every time I see the Death Jack, I just kill it like it's my job. And Keith's like, yeah, you do.
And then I'm like, like 12 points, eh? I'm like, 5, 6, 7, 8. Yeah, you know what that is? That's a Ripjaw, a Pistol Wraith, and 2 Warwitch Sirens. Just like, Protectorate, Enliven, go right to hell.
Yeah. I was so mad. I was so mad when I saw that list. Because I was like, you did that just for me, you son of a...
Yeah, because, like, the Avatar rolls up. He's like, me, I'm the Avatar. I'm like, and I I like choir sings no shooting, and my pistol where it throws up is like death chill.
Yeah.
The Avatar's just like F.
It's also an interesting headspace to know, like, you know, you've got the game down pretty well when you realize, like, you realize the matchup is so locked down and your game's locked down enough that if you just make these changes and execute them, you have an auto win, you know? And, like, they won't be able to adjust to you because you're one move ahead. Like,
yeah,
you just know
you've adjusted the list.
Exactly. So you have two people who are at comparable skill at that point, and you're just literally tweaking, like, one thing that, and it's like an arms race at that point, which is super fun. It's like, you know, you just, when you take that into tournaments, you're, like, unbeatable. Like, it's hard for people to deal with you when you're sort of at that sort of game plan.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's really, I'm glad you feel that way, mm-hmm. You know?
I mean, yeah.
And I think the point that led to these was you cannot have those moments, and we've said this a million times, and I will say it a million times more, you cannot have those kind of revelations, you do not have that kind of analysis, if after a game you go, man, I just got so unlucky, like my opponent's dice were on fire, like there was nothing I could have done. If you ever say to yourself at the end of a game, "There's nothing I could have done," you are lying to yourself and you are getting worse at the game.
Yep.
I'm not going to thought about it for like a week.
Yeah.
And talked about it with like five other people, and they all say the same. And you're just like, okay, it was literally, but like that. Yeah. I don't think that's ever happened.
Have you ever played a mistake-free game? Because I sure haven't.
No.
Not even close.
If you ever tell yourself there's nothing I could have done better, you are lying to yourself and getting worse at the game. I'm not going to sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
No.
If you say those words,
mm-hmm. Yeah,
You're on the path to being a terrible War Machine player.
There's a. Well, as famous as stupid threads, forum threads, but there was a huge flame war on Focus and Fury basically about that. Like, there were some fairly prominent forum and sort of tournament players who were basically like, this game ultimately is inconsistent because dice happen and you can't control that, and so it's not a competitive game or whatever. And I just would rage. Like, I just would put them on, and it was, you know, like 60 pages of me basically getting banned on any other forum but the Focus and Fury. And, you know, because they're totally inaccurate. It's just
stupid.
Yeah, because
at that point in time, you go to any con and the Masters was the same 10 guys.
Yep, exactly.
It was like, how is this game? Like,
it's always the same 10 guys. Yeah. You see dice happen. You saw, you know, Pagani, Flanzer, dice swung sort of for both. Like, you know.
Yeah, Pagani should have died.
Yeah, he should have died. And so, like, they could accuse each other of bad dice, but honestly, if... You know, and I guarantee Flanzer, thinking about that game, has thought, like, I would just do things differently. Like, maybe I don't even go for that. I just attrition away his list.
Or, like, after the first, like, you send the first one in, and after the first one misses, you're like, all right, abort.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And then same thing with Pagani, I'm sure. He's like, well, I probably wouldn't put Vlad there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Like,
I need to do more to protect Vlad.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
So, yeah, there's definitely, that. So that's the point about the whole, like, midnight revelations and going on and on about this last game forever is that, you have to be able to do that. You have to be able to identify.
Well, the reason why
student of the game.
You'll never play a perfect game. The reason why it's unattainable is because the dice are random. So you make decisions before you roll the dice. You live with the consequences of what the dice roll was. So, like,
yeah, I mean, the dice, the fact that dice are in the point I think you're making is the fact that dice are in the game makes the decision making process too complex to be executed perfectly.
Yeah.
Like, mm-hmm. Because you have to, because everything changes, almost everything changes with every die roll. It's like, oh, mm-hmm. Like this one didn't work. Now I have to like every other decision I make has to be readjusted based on that. Like every time you roll the dice.
Like for example, you're charging a heavy with a unit, right? How many guys do you send in?
Yeah.
You want to make sure the heavy dies, so you plan to overkill it, but you kill it with the first two banes. You have four more banes that now just get killed in reprisal that wouldn't normally have gotten killed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you didn't play that right. But you didn't know you were going to spike those dice rolls, so.
Yeah, but if you know the game, the one game where you send in only the three banes,
yeah,
and then you leave and then you got three low dice rolls, and you leave it with, you know, 10 health.
Yep.
And the jack lives and then does something horrible to you.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh,
yeah, combust or something.
That exact scenario happened with Aaron and Jay. Was like they calculated that it would take three banes to kill the Mauler, and he ended up putting in, or sorry, the Earthborn, and he ended up putting like six. Things mm-hmm. which caused an Axe or Thresher to just be like a godly Axe or Thresher, but I think he killed it on the fourth attack. So you know he just sort of planned to be a little bit safe.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Hmm. Anyway, I think that about wraps it up for us. Store updates, gentlemen.
Before they do store updates, I just want to thank Darren McDonald. He brought some beer for me to Captain Con. John brought it back, and apparently
teabagged the crap out of it. Oh, so glorious.
Apparently teabagged the crap out of it. Whatever. Anyway, the beer is delicious, and I am very grateful, and it was very thoughtful of you. And I believe there might have been one other person, but John can't remember their names.
No, actually, they dropped it off to Nigel. I wasn't there at the time.
Oh, okay. Then Nigel can't remember the names?
They dropped it off to Colin, actually.
Yeah,
okay,
Colin.
Colin,
yeah,
Colin can't remember their names. At any rate, if you could contact me, if you sent beer to me from Capticon, if you can contact me either on Facebook or on the forum so that I can properly thank you, I really appreciated it. Several of the things that I was sent were things I had wanted to try for a long time, and several of them were brand new, which I love as well. So thank you very much.
Store updates. Real quick, WTC pre-orders. So if you're European and you want to get some stuff, we have a WTC pre-order page that's open, and it's sort of basically helping to fund Muse's trip over there, which we're going to bring. We just purchased 4 cameras and a bunch of other stuff to make that trip happen. So that's available.
Wound status effects.
Wound status effects are out. Wound markers are almost done.
The big ones. The small
the
ones are done.
The 50mm 25 wound markers are almost done. We have the top halves produced. I just got to get the bottom halves lined up and figured out. The other thing was
full color status effects.
Yeah, not new stuff. God, you blew up my thought.
Sorry.
It's actually important. I have to remember it. It was something along the WTC announcement thing. Like, we had multiple announcements. It's crap. All right, we'll keep laundry list stuff real quick.
No, this is my fault. Like, I screwed it up.
Oh, no, I'm just saying, if you've got a big laundry list of interruptions, get them out now so I can go. hopefully I can remember what I was thinking.
Anyway, we have lots of new products hitting the store. So the 50 millimeter wound dial will be out probably next week, because this will drop tomorrow. So it'll be early next week, would be my guess.
So the wooden status effects are just single-sided? They're just like tokens?
Yep, the wooden status effects. And then we've got full... So all the wooden status effects are done and shipped. So they should be... They're on
Monday.
Yeah,
they'll be there Monday, maybe Friday.
Yeah, and then because people were asking for those. And then we have the other full color status effects also, double-sided Soul Corpse and Knockdown Stationery coming.
Yep. Another thing, the WTC Team Canada sets are currently up in the store. I don't know if we ever officially announced that.
Yeah.
Made any kind of advertisement. But if you're a Canadian, want to support your team, proceeds of those sets go to the Canadian WTC team. We've already sold, what, like 100?
No, they've sold more than 100 of those sets.
Well, more, yeah. We made 120,
yeah.
And they gave us like 16 or something.
No, they gave us 10.
10? Okay. And we've sold some of those. But we still have some left, so if you want to support your national team, or if you're an American listener or European listener who also wants to support Canada or whatever, doesn't matter.
They're actually a sweet-looking set.
Yeah. I just can't believe it. So, I mean, we've like, you know, they've really generated a ton of cash for their...
Yeah,
their team.
It's very exciting.
Yeah,
and a large portion of the proceeds from those sales go to support Team Canada. So.
Yeah, exactly.
Facebook and Twitter at Muse on Minis, MuseOnMinis.com.
Just want to mention like a couple more things.
Okay,
sorry. Number one, you can find our products at www.museonstore.com, or you can get there from the store link on MuseOnMinis.com. We also sell our stuff through Discount Games. So if you're buying miniatures from Jay. You can find all of our products there. And if you're in the EU, Firestorm Games carries all our stuff. So if you're buying miniatures from those guys, you can find our products there too. So like we've got a pretty wide reach.
Nice. Very nice.
And I had one more thing.
And if you have any kind of customer service questions or complaints or whatever, we'd love your feedback. And you can reach us at MuseOnLLC@gmail.com.
Yep. Last thing, if you would like your store to carry our product, we're starting our wholesale program. Let us know, or have your store contact us.
Yeah, actually, to do the whole program, if you send us an email with a store proposal, like if they basically confirm that you got them to make an account with us, we'll send you a free set.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So it's the get your store, enlist your store program.
Very cool. So if you get your store
to carry our products, then we'll send you a set of your choice.
Nice. Very neat. Yep, so keep an eye on Facebook and Twitter for new updates all the time. That's pretty much all for us today. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week, as always. This has been Keith.
Chad.
John.
Josh.
And Nigel.
And before I sign off, just a quick spoiler alert. If you go on to listen to our pre-ramble, it is chock full of Guardians of the Galaxy spoilers. But it's a good time.
Like,
no, I'd read it a long time ago, and like it's kind of long, and so I hadn't done it yet, and it's sort of not that piratey. But I figured I was like,
a shaggy
oh,
pirate joke?
I was like, it's kind of a shaggy pirate joke, kind of, not exactly, because there is actually a punchline. But like I was like, it wasn't directly about pirates, so I was like, oh, I could tell it like this to make it piratey. And so, like,
don't
I started.
Ruin it. Don't ruin it.
So I started thinking about that in the car, and like, I did it, told the joke out loud in the car once or twice, and I like made myself laugh. So,
you're now actually practicing pirate jokes.
Yeah,
in
yeah.
The car.
This is serious business.
We gotta invest
the way
here.
Comedians yeah. do, John.
It's the pirate comedy tour. We gotta get our act together. Yeah.
Josh wasn't here for that when we were talking about the pirates.
I was. I was sitting.
Oh, you were sitting over there. I thought you were asleep during that part of.
I did sleep for some of it, but I did hear a little bit about pirate comedy tour.
Yes. How you're the Ron White of the
pirate. Am I the Ron White of the pirate? Yep. I missed that part. I accept that's better than being the Larry the Cable Guy. Of,
that's Colin.
That's Colin. Yeah, that's totally Colin.
Nigel is apparently taking up the Foxworthy mantle.
Yeah. It's also yeah. I would rather be Ron White than both of those. I'm okay with that.
What did we call him? Like Colin the Plumber?
Just because
Colin the HVAC repairman.
He's got so much yeah. crack.
It would have to be pirate related, so it'd have to be like yep. Colin the Bilge Pumper or something yep. like that.
Oh, he pumps bilge.
Yeah. The poop deck.
So a pre-ramble this week is about Guardians of the Galaxy, the best film that Marvel has made.
Yeah.
Quote Josh Max.
Ever.
Yeah. No, it's
I think that's probably true.
There were a few like random things, but there will always be random things and like comic book movies. Yeah. But like for the most part, I just enjoyed the movie.
But for I found myself like just grinning a lot during that movie, and
or laughing out loud.
Laughing out loud. There's a lot. I need to see it again because there's a lot I missed because I was laughing so damn hard.
Yeah,
and the whole audience was just laughing. I couldn't hear what they were saying.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's so many moments. Like every time I thought like, oh man, here we go. Like down the track of every other. They were like setting up for one of those moments. Like they would just interrupt it with something funny or something random.
I also like how they sort of. You know, the orb is sort of a MacGuffin that everybody's chasing around, and then, like, they just sort of own up to it. They're like, it's got kind of a Maltese Falcon or Ark of the Covenant sort of vibe. They're just sort of winking at the audience, just like, you know.
I think the only thing that really, like, pulled me out during the movie was the character of Drax occasionally got on my nerves. But
Drax.
The super literal.
He was okay.
Yeah,
he was the least.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. Just sometimes I was just like, well, that's not funny. Like, they hadn't put that in there, but yeah,
it was. They definitely did not have someone with great comedic timing in that role. I'm not familiar with that actor. But.
It was one of the few complaints I had about the movie. Also, was just I thought it's cool that he's super literal. I just don't think they actually maintain that.
Right, yeah.
Because when he was like, I don't give two shits or whatever, we have to, like, not give two shits. And then I was expecting him to be like, I do not have two shits. Excrement, and then hand it to anybody, you know? Like, that should have completely broken down that whole speech.
Yeah, there was a way to write that where it's clever and funny, and they just didn't really do that. So, yeah. But aside from that, it was great.
I don't remember the character's name, but Merle. It was Merle.
Yeah.
His character was enjoyable.
Yeah. He was enjoyable. His weapon seems crazy powerful.
Well, Chad pointed out, like, there were a bunch of guys that just, like, about 10 seconds just stood there with guns pointed at him, like, not shooting him while he whistled at them all.
Well, I'm sure the entire time that thing was, like, zipping around and, like, it, like, went into the spacecraft and, like, killed the guy in there. And then it came back around to kill the guys, like, closer to him. I'm like, shoot him! It doesn't take that long to be like, what's going on?
Oh. I would have liked to see him, like, whistle and, like, dive behind a rock, and they, like, shooting at the rock, and then they all get killed. But, it was fun.
Yeah,
it was
there's
fun.
Ways to do it. My other thing,
then he can't give his team the order to stop fighting, though. Like, that's when they're trying to get him to, like, kill the other.
Well, they don't have to kill him. I mean, stormtroopers shooting at a guy doesn't mean that he's going to, you know,
get shot. I also am assuming from the, like,
the cutting that it was like went faster than it was.
Oh, well, that maybe. But I was going to say, I'm assuming that he's a fairly integral character to the Guardians storyline as it continues.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Like, I know, I'm starting to get more knowledgeable about comics, but I know literally nothing about Guardians of the Galaxy.
Here's some interesting stats from the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It did $1 million less than Winter Soldier did on opening weekend. It did $93 million versus $94 million. It did huge numbers with 25 to 39-year-old males. So that's probably not surprising. The surprising thing was 44% of the audience that saw the movie was female. So it actually has pretty wide appeal.
I mean, that sounds good. I don't, like, without looking at, like, other similar types of films and other different types
of films. No Marvel movie has had that kind of reach across to the other gender. It's like, that's like the holy grail for summer movies. They want the 25 to 39-year-old males and then females to go. So I thought it was interesting because
it's.
That reminds me of the old, like, Simpsons where Homer's like, I'm a white male, age 18 to 35. Everyone listens to me. And then he pulls out the nuts and gum together at last, like, from the cabinet and starts eating.
It's a.
The old Simpsons was so good.
Yeah.
It's one thing to say that it's one of the better, if not one of the best, probably one of the best comic book movies that have ever been made, but it's very much not in the same vein as other comic book movies.
I was also super grateful that they did not tie it. Like, I'm sure at some point it will be, but I'm glad that for now they're not tied in any way to the rest of the Marvel, like, stuff that's going
just
on.
Just via Thanos.
I just want them to be the Guardians.
Like, here's what I super appreciated about that movie.
Their own universe.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I know it won't be, but it would be nice if I didn't need... I don't need to see any, like, Avengers plus Guardians.
I personally think that's one of the greatest failings. Like, I've just started to read comic books. I'm into some of the newer DC stuff. One of the things that ruins stories for me faster than anything else is when one superhero crosses into another's book.
Yeah.
Like, I think that Superman existing in the same universe as Batman contributes to ruining Batman. Like,
yeah.
He's like, why doesn't he just, like...
All Batman's villains have to superpower creep, and then Batman has to power creep, and then everybody has to...
Well, you're also, also like, every time Batman's, like, fighting a villain, you're like, why don't I just get Superman to punch him?
Yeah. Well, no, but then the other, those, like, every 10 years, they dust out some idiotic super suit that, you know, punches Superman in the nuts or whatever. It's so dumb.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's hooked up to, like, the entire...
apparently, in one of the current lines, Batman wants to go to, like, the planet of the evil god, the Thanos of the Marvel Universe, and fight him, and he's got, like... this suit that Superman, like, forged in a sun, and then, like, every other superhero, like, put their magic jizz on it. Like, Aquaman took it down to the bottom of the ocean, and, like, and Green Lantern, like, zapped it with his ring. And so they basically all just jizzed on it to make Batman's, like, super amazing suit. And it's just like, wow, this is really dumb.
Wouldn't that be super?
Thing I've ever heard.
Really
wouldn't
dumb.
That be amazing if just Superman were in it?
Like, we wanted to make this for you since you're the only one of us that's just flesh and blood.
Well, when
and
Superman's like, fighting the, like, Thanos of the... of the DC universe, and they're not under the yellow sun of the Earth. You know, he's going to be kind of like, you got to get Batman for that.
I had a friend. I was like, Batman is a significantly better, like, superhero than Superman.
Like everyone is.
Yeah. Well, yes, but I'm just like, he's like, these were our two favorites, right? And I'm like, oh, he's, you know, he's flawed, yada yada yada. Here's the reason, and I'm like, and, you know, like, he's brilliant, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, for some reason, that was always a sticking point with him. And he's like, according to the comic books, Superman is super intelligent as well. Like, apparently, in addition to being super what everything else, he's also just, like, super, super smart. He's like, no. He's way smarter than a normal human being. And I'm just like, well, he acts really, really, really stupid. Like, so I don't.
I mean, like, there's also a difference between, like, intellectual processing power and its application.
That's true.
Like, Batman has spent... Bruce Wayne, Batman, is my favorite superhero.
Yeah.
Like, he's the most fun one to read when the story is about him.
Right.
Not,
agreed.
I also kind of am not a huge fan of the extended Bat family. Like, reading Batman comics are also kind of annoying because every other page, it's like, if you want to know what happened here, read Nightwing number 8. And I was like, I don't give a shit about Nightwing.
Yeah. What's coming out... DC, by far, I just think has the jankiest, like, once you get past Batman, it gets significantly janky immediately.
Yeah.
Because, like, isn't Green Lantern...
He's DC.
The Lanterns are space police.
Wonder Woman, dumb. Superman, stupid.
The thing about Green Lantern is, like...
Aquaman, super dumb.
Like
Martian
that,
Manhunter.
The Shazam. Does it get any...
Goddamn
Shazam. Yeah. And the worst part is they're going to get The Rock to play him.
to play the transformed Shazam, not Billy. Like,
oh, I thought it was just the same jerk off like a lightning bolt on his chest. There's like a little guy.
Well, no, the problem is the Shazam
in the
is
actual comic book Billy Batson.
Yeah, it's like Billy. There's a little. It's like a 12-year-old Shazam is a 12-year-old kid, and he knows the magic word. And Shazam stands for something like S is the wisdom of Solomon, and he says the magic word, and he turns into like
an ATM machine.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which is redundant, by the way.
He turns into Superman Plus. Like Crump's joke about Superman is that he's like the everything in the kid, like the little kid designing a superhero. Like, my superhero has super strength and super smart, but Shazam is all that plus magic lightning. And so it's just like kid would want to be.
Supposedly, Shazam is like the foil to Superman because Superman's allergic to magic.
Yes, he is allergic to magic.
What? Like, God,
I did see something where Marvel is. I think it was Kevin Feige or Feig or whatever. He's one of the big wigs at Marvel Studios said that they're getting ready to cast Doctor Strange. So, looking forward to that.
Mm. Yeah, I've always been, like, I'm not a big comic book guy. The reason that I've always been DC is Batman and then their, like, adult imprints, things like Vertigo, like comics. Like, those are the things that I read growing up, so.
I actually super enjoyed Lobo, and that's DC, but.
Not Rob Liefeld.
Yeah, I love his art. By the way, like, Liefeld's Batman is like so out of control, retarded.
Like, how many abs can I put on?
Yeah, yeah. Just like muscles on top of muscles with like veiny veins
and no feet,
Yeah,
just no feet descending.
The guy who draws, he's like, all I want to do is draw Bane. I just want to draw Bane, and more.
But
Bane.
He has like this distinctive style because he uses like gouaches, like so he's like super kind of like artsy, but it's just still terrible. But then it's like. Batman's ears, those little ear things, are just out of control. They're like 16. They're cell phone antennas. They're just crazy.
The guns are enormous. and all the women are some sort of crippled deformities because their like butts and their backs don't line up at all.
Gotcha.
Ever.
So, yeah, well, your butt always has to be front, and then the boobs are also front. So
right, yeah. Oh. Yeah.
The point that I started with was that I like most heroes, every superhero I like better in their own environment. Like reading about Batman in Gotham City, it's like it's his setting. It was developed for him. He works in it. Metropolis, Superman works fine there. I don't personally care for Superman, but some people like him, and that's fine. Like, I've read Wonder Woman, and I kind of enjoy it, because it's just her fighting with Greek gods. Like, it's just it's just new Greek mythology, basically. It's just like Hera is all pissed, because Zeus banged Wonder Woman's mom, and so, like, Hera's the bad guy, and Wonder Woman punches her in the face, and it's fine. But he crosses over, like, Batman has no business interacting with the Greek gods.
Yeah.
Superman really has no business interacting with the Greek gods. Just like, this doesn't seem right. But they insist on making all their whole universes intertwined. And so, like, things break down. And I'm glad for now that Guardians of the Galaxy doesn't do that. And it's because especially going beyond Earth for a lot of the superheroes makes very little sense. Although, well, like, in the comic books, they've done all that, like Planet Hulk and...
And it, like, drove Iron Man. Like, it drove Tony Stark, like, crazy in Iron Man 3. I don't know if you saw that. Like, the entire movie, he's just having, like, PTSD from, like, oh, God, aliens exist, why?
Yeah.
So, to bring it back to Guardians of the Galaxy, one thing that I really, really appreciated about the movie was it was a comic book movie that was bright and colorful, which is... You know, for some reason, they've gotten into this trying to make superheroes mainstream, so they've made it gritty and more real, which is good, but it was kind of fun to watch a movie that was a little more fanciful.
Yeah, sometimes that makes sense, yeah.
And it was just a really nice, like, all the scenes in space were very colorful and, like...
There was actually, I completely agree with this, because there were times, like, while I was watching the movie, I told Lance this after I watched it. I was like, there were moments, like, you saw it, and you're like, that's a splash panel. I know if I went to, like, the comic book and flipped it open to, like, a certain page, I would find the splash panel. Like, and there were several of those, and I really liked that was, like, it felt like it was seamless and integrated, but at the same time, when you saw it, you're like, I'm in a comic book. Yeah.
The other thing
that was cool.
That's awesome.
Is, like, the movie That Fifth Element was the first thing I compared to on the way out was, like, it's so unique and visually interesting that it just takes it. Even if the story was, like, light, you just don't notice it because you're soaking it in. It's kind of like watching a period piece. Sometimes I just love period pieces, even though the story's not all that great, because it's, like, it's so detailed that I just love sort of absorbing those details. This is exactly that. It's like, the ships were cool, space was cool, aliens are cool, just weird stuff. That, like, mining colony, and there's, like, grass in it, and, you know. So everything was, like, super cool.
All the electricity guns are cool. Yeah. Like, that's my favorite kind of gun.
Yep.
Electro...
I don't know why I don't play Signar.
Electro dongolators.
Also, the one thing in the movie that, like, brought me out of it, and, like, I was telling this to Keith, like, and it's super minor, and, like, it was, like, I was telling Colin afterwards, you know, because it's fun to talk about these things with Colin.
Yep.
But I was like, it didn't really bother me. It was just, like, something that occurred to me, and then I immediately was just like, ah, whatever. Like, I want to have fun. But, like, when the ship is crashing and Groot starts, like, growing his, like, little wood barrier... And I'm like, there's no amount of tree that could, like, stop an entire, like, spaceship
when he was,
like, completely, like, incinerating them.
Right.
When he was doing that, I was like, you might want to move that ball away from the fire right next to you.
Like, I don't care how much tree there is. Like, it would just be completely, like, vaporized, like, by the force of, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then they were just, like, they just, like, get up and dust off, like, you know, ooh.
Yeah.
Oh, damn, Groot's dead.
Well, like, that. Well, actually, what it immediately reminded me of is, kind of a tangent story, but I was at, a long time ago, I went to Niagara Falls, and they show exhibits of all the barrels that people have gone over the falls in, and what, like, the condition that they came out in. Mm-hmm. For a while, people were just trying to build, like, more and more solid things. So you saw this guy go over in what basically looked like one of those gas canisters, the big industrial, like, long cylindrical tubes. Mm-hmm. And he put padding inside of it, but it was basically a rigid structure that he went in with, and he came out, like, with 8 broken bones and bruises just everywhere. The guy who went over the falls and came out the most unscathed went over in a rubber ball. So I was thinking, like, when he was growing, I was like, oh, it looks sort of like the rubber ball that the guy went. So I just assumed it was, like, pliable enough that he sort of bounced out.
Sure, whatever.
But I guess he then exploded.
I immediately,
when it was matchsticks and everybody's laying all over the ground, you're like, they're dead.
Like, I immediately wrote it off and was like, whatever, want to enjoy the movie more than I want to nitpick this, like, one detail.
And that's that happened, like, a few times through the movie, and that's how I know, like, the storyline was engaging, because I was able, like, for example...
Because you just, like, don't care.
Yeah. Like, when they go to form the net of, like, ships to slow his ship down, like, whatever, that's fine. But, like, so they do that, and then... Instead of having his now, like, not under attack fighters just, like, fly behind them and shoot them in the back and blow up the net, he's like, bomb the planet. Like, suicide bomb the planet. Like, I was like, well, I don't.
He was using
whatever.
Yeah. He was like, what would Magneto do? He had to watch Last Stand real quick.
Yeah, that's good. That's another good one.
Yeah.
The other thing that sort of made me marvel in the movie is how seamlessly the CGI characters, the raccoon and the tree, were integrated.
All the CGI in the movie was integrated really well. I was noticing that like throughout. I was just like, well, this is like usually there's some like shutter or something that catches the eye, but in this one, I didn't really
like The Hobbit, for example. Which is also a good movie.
Yeah.
And a lot there's scenes where you're pulled out of it because the actors look like they're swinging against air and then something has been...
Particularly
sort of,
the new ones are just garbage.
Yeah, for that. But I mean, you see that in all kinds of movies, but in this
especially, movie... Especially, like, the perfect example is the more recent Star Wars trilogy. And those entire movies are green screened and it's...
Yeah, but I mean...
They're also a little older now.
True, true.
But I mean, it just blew my mind, like the action sequences with Groot and like even Batista or Drax petting Rocket at the end of the movie, like that looked pretty real.
Yeah,
you know,
you're right actually.
Yeah, and that kind of stuff just hasn't been done that well before, in my opinion.
That's one of the advantages of this movie too, though, is everything's so colorful and vibrant and like animated that they can, you know, like it just fits in.
Yeah,
Nigel and I talked about this earlier, but I just wanted to say that I really enjoyed Rocket's character, especially the voice acting, which normally I get a little...
Bradley Cooper did a good job.
Normally I get a little salty about not voice actors, just having regular actors do it, because a lot of times they just use their own voice and it ends up being not much of anything, but Bradley Cooper did a really good interpretation for that character.
Supposedly there's a video on YouTube or something of... Vin Diesel doing all the I Am Groots in, like, the different languages that it would be released to, like, just, like, with this huge grin on his face. Probably because he's thinking about, like, how many dollars per word. Like, I haven't seen it yet, but I want to search.
I mean, he's like a mega nerd. He probably loves...
Oh, I have no doubt.
Being in
I have
movie,
no doubt. I mean, and like it was actually amazing because I was like, okay, I know that this character only says I am Groot. I assume he'll mostly just be like this dumb whatever that follows Rocket around, and Rocket will be the show. And then I was like, oh, I actually really like Groot.
the two times that they had conversations between Rocket and Groot.
Yeah.
Where he was like, I'm Groot, and Rocket would be like, I know it's better than 11%, but blah, blah, blah. It reminded me of Discworld, where there's an orangutan that just says ook, and everyone understands what he says and carries on the other half of the conversation. But it's just like, that was executed in a way that made me laugh every time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the characters were just great.
Yeah. And I do think that Andy, whatever the actor's name is...
Andy from Parks and Rec.
Andy from Parks and Rec.
Chris Pratt.
Yeah, he made the movie in my opinion. He made the movie.
I think he's a star on the rise. Like he's going to be the next like Harrison Ford.
That scene when he's just dancing in front of the
the old MacGruber trick.
Yeah.
I'm distracting you.
Yeah. How about the opening sequence? I mean,
spoilers. The opening sequence was great.
Yeah, the opening
Well, we'll have to at the end of this, I guess we'll have to put in a...
Yeah, spoilers.
There's a lot of spoilers, and then have Lance like throw it back in the beginning. Sorry,
we'll just before we sign out, we'll be like, and if you want to listen to the preamble, like,
we could just have Lance like.
So far, we haven't like really like, hey, you spoiled.
No, but
much.
I mean,
what about the opening? What the like the?
I mean, we spoiled his Groot dies.
His kind of his his origin story.
No, that was awesome. But I just really enjoyed just the intro where the music's playing and he's like dancing and kicking the little things across and you know screaming into the mic.
Screaming into the rat.
The rat, yeah.
John, that must have been John's. Like, but when we walked in, you can't miss the beginning. It's super sweet. And then his like mom dies. I'm like,
Like, what kind of weird effing movies do you like?
Yeah, cancer.
Get him, cancer.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect. No, I actually didn't. I didn't want you to miss that because I felt it was important character development from the very beginning.
Hmm.
Otherwise, just like, who's this kid?
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, it's cancer kid.
Yeah.
Cancer kid.
That's another thing I really appreciated is they could play such cool music and have a good reason to do so.
Yes, that they were able to integrate sweet music.
I was curious about whether or not that's because I know nothing about the comics. I wondered if the lyrics of different songs like play a major role within
don't
the comic.
No, because Star-Lord I did read up on his backstory just to see how closely the movie paired it. It's quite a bit different.
Yeah,
Star-Lord in the comics was apparently. His mom died because, like, some aliens came down and killed her. And he's like, vengeance, blah, blah, blah. So he's tried to sign up for some space police. And they're like, no, you're like, at least canon. We're not letting you into the space police.
We don't go way back with your dad.
And then, like, we're taking this other guy instead. Like, his friend who also was signed up for the space police. They took him instead. But, like, he punched that guy out and took his place or something. Hmm. And that's how he got out into space. So, like, apparently space... Space.
The space commissioner telling him that he's a loose space cannon.
Yeah. You're a loose space cannon, Star-Lord. So it's the backstory is very different, but I like this character concept a lot better.
Yeah. Yeah. Just you saying Star-Lord a couple of times reminded me. I loved it when the guy finally goes, Star-Lord.
He's like finally. Yeah.
I need to see it. Yeah, there were a lot of guys.
At the end when he opened his mom's Christmas present. I was so mad that it wasn't like the Schwartz. It wasn't like a little necklace. It's like, you're a prince. I'm a bona fide prince. it was just like, oh, another tape. That makes sense.
And it was corny, but I liked it that Star-Lord was his mom's nickname for him. Like mm-hmm. That
yeah.
was cute.
Yeah.
And the present for a whole new soundtrack for next time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Indeed.
Do you guys want to talk about War Machine? I mean,
I'm enjoying talking about Guardians.
Yeah, it's like, I could go either
Does way. Anybody have anything to talk about War Machine?
I do.
We have some advanced Bradagus Thorl spoilers.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
What's our number?